when we met, we had put up the meeting norms. So she's just writing the, they're the same ones that we used last time, but just as a kind of quick reminder.
Can I add, don't talk with your mouth full?
No.
I just violated it.
That's why we can't add it, because we're just going to file.
Governor Newsom is generally going to be a little more supportive of public education. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I think this charter school thing is going to begin to lose some steam.
Mm-hmm.
I hope it will. It's very hard for school districts to do what they need to do without the funding to do it.
Right, absolutely.
And if you're dragging all these kids away from the school districts with the traditional ADA formula,
right. Mm-hmm. How can you do
what you need to do?
And by the way, you're still responsible for them. You just don't get the money for them.
Exactly.
That's the thing about it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, they have some theater. She has a neat teacher printing.
I love it.
Boy, that's beautiful. Penmanship.
You know, it'd be kind of cool at some point, maybe in the near future, to kind of get a sense of where people are at in terms of legislative advocacy.
Right.
And if there's anything we want to kind of call us on as far as
Well, I don't think that may be perfect, given the budget's out.
Yeah.
That's what our next workshop should be.
Yeah, because it would be kind of cool if we were able to kind of line up, you know, because I'm going to be meeting like my government relations folks soon. I know LACCD has, you know, and so
IEA,
you know, whatever. Let's see if there's
then
any alignment there.
Right, and how that would look.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
That's like a favorite
right
there.
What was it? What was kind of the.
Now you can eat them.
Temperature as far as the thing
that's. Oh, there was lots of questions. Oh, wow. On the other side of any breakdown,
they have a
I said you don't have makeup. I thought that was like a compliment. And she slapped me. I'm confused. I don't know. I'll figure it out.
Let me tell you why you're
40 years from now. I'll figure it out 40 years from now. That's the beauty of it. That's the beauty of it.
You that they're not going to get it when you finally say one?
No, they're when you get caught off guard, but you just reacted. So now we know you. Now we know you're not a thinker, you're a reactor.
Of course we did when we joke about them.
I can tell you, Elvis, it'll be 40 years and you're still not figuring it out. There's no figuring that out.
It's okay, they can't figure me out either.
She doesn't manipulate with my other children. Thank God they didn't get it because they would have totally manipulated that, you know? We always tease her about that. But she's not interested in that. She's like, I don't understand why girls are
Mm-hmm. So good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
I know.
Good morning.
Good morning.
One, thank you guys all for being here so early, bright and early on a Saturday morning. I'm sure that you all have things to do, as do I, so we're not going to be here forever. I know, we're so sad about that. So thank you, Adriana. Where did she go?
I'm right here.
Thank you for breakfast.
Yay! Thank you.
So what I wanted to do is just kind of read through the norms quickly. So who wants to read number one? I'm going to do teacher style.
I will. Okay. Balance your participation. Speak and listen. Make sure everyone's voice is heard.
Second way.
Do you want me to read them all? Or?
No, I want different people to read. I want.
Listen respectfully without interrupting. And actively with an ear for understanding others' views.
Go ahead.
Oh, nice.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
Choral reading. Go ahead.
Ask questions for clarification to help avoid making assumptions.
Avoid blame, speculation, and inflammatory language.
And the last one is commit to learning, not debating. Comment in order to share information, not to persuade. And really, these norms are really about what today is about. Today is really about sharing information, understanding each other's perspective. What we're not going to do is we're not going to debate formulas right now. We're not going to, people are going to be able to share a point of view. We're not going to interrupt that sharing of a point of view to argue or debate that. Because what we really want to walk away from is a really good understanding of where everybody is in terms of their district's considerations, in terms of those different criteria that have you've heard about so far between other workshops, the proposal that was presented, the Hanover study, or any of the community college formula, any of those things. And then we'll talk about at some point really briefly the thoughts people have about when to actually move forward with a new formula. And then at the end is where we'll have an opportunity to ask for additional information. So please keep that in mind, that during the parts about consideration for your own district, it's not to ask other people things, or not to make assumptions, not to make speculation, right? It's the time to, at the end, you can ask respectfully for information or ask questions of LARIC staff, of each other, but that's where that is, right? And anybody have questions about what today looks like? Got it. Since we have people some people have representatives from their district, I'm going to ask that the executive members share to start with, let's say we start on considerations. So they'll start, and then I will ask, is there anybody else in their district that has additional considerations since you're here, right? So we want to make sure we're getting everybody's input. Anybody have questions about that? No? Okay. Awesome. And really the idea is to get that understanding from everybody so that we are able to move to the next step of creating, developing, identifying an equitable funding formula. But we can't really do that unless we have a good sense of where everybody is and what they're thinking. So we're going to start with the point people had done some work on so we're going to have them present theirs first, and then that way just kind of write notes about your thoughts in terms of the criteria or the ideas that they came up with. I don't know who's talking.
We didn't discuss that part, but I think we didn't discuss who's talking, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
But I think we've had some, we haven't met together since we've had some change of, I guess I'll just do a summary and then we can chime in. So we really struggle with coming up with a formula because we felt like
it's kind of an unfair ask in some ways. So we really wanted to come up with, and we really had a lot of discussion around that we're a consortium, and we have to think as a consortium, not each individual district. And we had a lot of very thoughtful discussion around that as well. So we tried to come up with a philosophy of how we would look at funding. We wanted to get to that point and kind of move us to a point where we're not driven by necessarily totally by a formula, but also a philosophy of how we'll act to serve the students within our consortium in our region. So we had three areas that we looked at. One concept is, if we're not married to it, was looking at a base plus X. And base would be defined however the execs look at defining the base. It could be a percentage of what they had the previous year. It could be, but that does not always positive for smaller districts, because a larger district, you know, has, you know, they start with a greater number, so their base is not so differentiated from where they were before. Where a smaller district, that's harder to get to that number. So it was base plus X, the X being whatever the additional dollars coming down, because each year our consortium funding from the state, based on the way the state allocates the money, has grown. The other part was looking at some kind of accountability measures, but we haven't determined what that was, but we all have agreed in many of our discussions, and also with the data and accountability funds that came down from the state each district received, we need to create a baseline of what that looks like. We haven't defined what that looks like, but we know that there is a baseline. And there's one more, and I can't.
Another one was
adjustment period.
Yeah, and then if we did reduce any district, that there would be an adjustment period, because most of the district's funding cycle is, I know in our district, and Bob can confirm this, I had to turn in our proposed so-called budget in November. Here we are in February. So, you know, and then we just reconfirmed it recently. So we would have to get someone a cycle to make sure that, you know, whatever the recommendations caught up with their own individual district funding cycle. And that was really just the philosophy around it. We did play with scenarios. We had a variation of commitment. I wouldn't say it was 100. It definitely was not 100% consensus, so I don't think it's fair to bring those forward, but really it was around the philosophy. So did I miss anything? Okay. I don't know, Mon, did I capture it? And Elvis, did I capture it? Okay.
Sounds good.
Yeah, sounds good.
Okay. So that was really just our philosophy, and Lancey and all of us, and as well as Michelle, Justin, we all kind of work through this process.
Okay. So, what we're going to do next is really start with the considerations. So, what I want, or what I'm hoping, is that you're going to share information about your own district, just your district, and what do you want the other agencies to consider before ever deciding on a future funding formula? What is it that you want all the rest of us to really be aware of? So, anybody? Burbank, Montebello, LA, USC, LACCD, who wants to go first?
We'll go first.
Okay.
We did a PowerPoint because that's the way we roll. But we thought it was important to give you a perspective of where we have come from and where we plan to go. And Bob, you're going to jump in?
Yes, I will. Being very cognizant of the rules of the day.
So before we started adult education in LACCD, we had non-credit. We didn't necessarily have adult education. As you know, we were married to LAUSD. We got divorced, and now we're living together again for the sake of the children, which are our students. So we really looked at the state's purpose, which was to create greater alignment between the system, streamlining the student experience, and increasing opportunities to build students' employable skills. And that's really what the legislation was about. How we've embraced this at the local level in LACCD is we've done a lot of curricular revisions, because we had very different pockets of non-credit across our district, and that was a campus decision. Even though we are a district, we're nine separate personalities. And our curricular process is owned by the faculty, and they sit at the table for budgeting and planning, et cetera. We've also looked at specialized student supports for our non-credit students that were not in place prior to adult education coming together. We've looked at increased enrollment, success in job placement, and integration with credit-bearing programs. Often non-credit stood alone in our district as skill building. It didn't necessarily have a seamless pathway from non-credit to credit. So where we started this work, I think in 2013 is when the first ABG came down. 2014 is when several of us sitting around this table kind of joined together, and we brought teams from our district to start adult education, and that was the planning grant year. We had uneven program offerings across our 9 colleges. We had limited support services, especially for non-credit students. We had a limited specialized leadership, and we had lack of integration with the USD. So we were not aligned between your system and the USD's adult ed into our system. We've had rapid expansion because things take a long time to move in our district. We've developed a baseline infrastructure. We have adult education administrators at each campus. We have a district adult education administrator, which is myself. We have adult counseling for adult students at each campus, and we also develop a leadership infrastructure around the different points of service. We've added capacity to all of our institutions, we've enhanced our curriculum, we've increased enrollment, and now we offer the WEOO2 grant at all of our colleges. Prior to this grant, we only had it at 6 of our 9 colleges. Like I like to refer to as the West Side Spine, which is Harvard, College, West LA, and Pierce. We had very limited non-credit programs. That was the decision of the leadership at that campus. We did not have the WEOO2 grant in play. We have it now in play at all of our campuses. So how we have grown since this. 2017, this is our curriculum development, and this is a long process within our district. We had 33 certificate programs approved, 109 courses approved. And then we have major efforts again at those 3 colleges, Harbor, West, and Pierce, who had no program offerings with the amount of programs that they have developed. So the way it works within our district is a course is approved at the campus level, goes to the district, goes to the board that's approved, goes to the state. Once it's at the state, that takes 6 to 8 months, and that's a fast track approval process. We cannot offer that class until it's approved at the board. Once all those courses are approved, we have to go back for a second round to have a program approved. So a program is 2 or more courses in sequence that are together, another 6 to 8 month process. So for us to ramp up, it's really difficult because there's these different levels of approval that we have to go through. This year, from July 2018 to December 2018, we're on track to beat our last year's curriculum development, which is huge, 33 programs and 109 courses. This year, we've already had 15 programs approved in the first 6 months of the year and 82 courses approved for non-credit. And this is really building, meeting our students where they're at, building the skills that they need. Again, I explained what our curriculum challenge is, 6 to 8 months, and remember, nothing really happens in the summer in the state. We are a September through May approval operation. This is our enrollment programs. If you look from 2015, we had 3,769 non-credit FTS, and if you look to 2017-18, we were up to 5,700. So we have grown in our non-credit and what we're offering. Our sections, 1,400 and 1,516, and now we're up to 3,200. So remember, we had 3 colleges that had no non-credit, and the other colleges had varying levels of non-credit, which is where we house adult education in our district. So one of the other things that we have to do in our district is track awards, and that's part of the new funding formula, is because that measures success in education. So in 16-17, we have 850 awards given for non-credit, and in 17-18, we have 1,226. We're creating model accountability, and that we shared at our last workshop, we talked about different funding formulas that are out there within our district. The money comes to our district, and then we do not do an even distribution across our 9 colleges. We did that at first because we wanted people to build capacity. Now that the colleges are building capacity, we're building accountability. So they get a base allocation, and then on top of that, it's based on innovation and success. So we give them their base for operation, and that's the same across all the colleges because of the infrastructure of a dean, which we call the adult education administrator. We have the classified and a counselor. On top of that, you have to earn your dollars through innovation and success. Innovation is we look at what programs and courses are building to meet the needs within their geographic area, and the number of the needs within the college. Success, we look at what's the completion. So we look at how many students have successfully completed 60% of a course. Because non-credit in our district is open entry, open exit. So they do not have to stay. We look at who have we retained for 60% of the course. What we find out, and I was a non-credit administrator at East LA College for 14 years, 12 to 14 years in working with non-credit and specialized grants. The students will dip in, get the skills that they need, they dip out, and then they come back with the next set of skills up. So we looked at 60% of completion with there. And then also we looked at the number of certificates and awards that have been posted. All of this stuff was cross-checked between board minutes, our MIS data, as well as the campus data. Our efforts moving forward, we plan to continue curriculum development. We plan to increase the offerings of adult education. It's an area of growth within our district. Increase HISET and GED offerings. All of our campuses are now GED testing centers within LACCD. We're increasing outreach and marketing. We're offering programs to parents of dual enrolled students. We offer that on this side as well. We have students who have dual enrollment at the high school. Their parents come to an ESL class here. We're working at increasing work readiness programs. We're advocating for full-time faculty. Our district is taking a lead on that, and Bob probably can add more to that. But right now, non-credit faculty don't count in our FON, which is our faculty obligation number. So they don't count when they look, do we have the right number of faculty for students that we serve, the right number of full-time faculty. Our district realizes this is important for our area to grow, so they're taking a legislative lead on that at the state level. The other reason this is important, because all the decisions on funding are made at a table with faculty, because of shared governance within our district. Non-credit faculty do not sit at that table. We need them to sit at that table. And then we're looking at the redevelopment of college career centers to enhance job placement, and we're also looking at this with our workforce centers. We know within the community college formula that employability and success is part of that measure. We know that that's coming for adult ed, so we want to make sure we link those and build that together. How we're integrating this across our district is we're connected with all the colleges' SCFF action plans, which is part of the student success and the funding formula.
Student-centered funding formula.
Right, student-centered funding formula.
Which is the new way in which community colleges are funded in the state.
Right. We're connected to college services. We're wraparound services for our students. We're doing referrals to make sure that we're eliminating the barriers for them to be successful in the classroom. A large number of our students have suffered from experienced food and housing insecurity, so we're also addressing that as well. The speaker that will be at the March 9th conference did a large study within our district, so I think that will be very interesting. And we're building accountability measures and dashboards. This is one of the dashboards that we have built within our district.
There'll be a quiz on this later, by the way.
So you'll be emailing us the presentation.
Exactly.
And so this is one of the ways that we're building accountability as well, the different dashboards within our district and accessibility by administrators, faculty, and staff. And then one of the questions that led to this was what our carryover funds were. We only have 17, 18 carryover funds at this point. We're allocated at $7.2 million. We have $3.4 million that we're carrying over. And I think what's important to note is we're still within the spending period guidelines, which is $17-$18 were allocated in July of 2018. We have until December of 2019 to do this final expenditure, and we're on track to meet that deadline. And this source is also from the California Adult Education website. And that's it.
So let me just kind of recap and add a few items to this. So what we've done the past few years is we've spent a lot of time just building the infrastructure and working to build consensus. You know, we have our faculty, the administrators, our presidents, our chancellor, our board, and we were sort of starting from ground zero with adult education in the district to try and get people's heads around it, because it really was not something that in any organized way that we were working on in past years until the LARIC model came about. So it has been about building capacity, particularly in the areas of developing programs and curriculum, and also in a very significant way, faculty development. Adrienne Ann mentioned our non-credit faculty and something called the Faculty Obligation Number, or the FON, and it's been a problem for the community college system for decades that no college really wanted to add full-time adult ed faculty because they did not get credit towards the so-called faculty obligation number, which meant that we couldn't get funding for the positions. Now LACCD is leading a statewide effort to get legislation that would have non-credit faculty, adult ed faculty included in the FON, which if successful should lead to more of a full-time adult ed faculty. Colleges are very different from K-12, and in many K-12s, what the superintendent and the board says goes as it goes down through the chain of command and implementation. In our world, based on shared governance, AB 1725 legislation, where faculty have something known as primacy on 10 plus 1 curriculum-related issues, everything falls to them for the development of programs and curriculum. And everything is a lengthy discussion. So there is really no, if you will, top-down authoritative method to run a college. And in our case, in relation to adult education, we don't have one Queen Mary, we have 9 Queen Marys, 10 if you want to include the district office, in terms of trying to get it in the right direction. As I like to say, you got the Queen Mary at the, at the dock, and we're just now moving it away from the dock and heading towards the breakwater. But in the process of heading it out to sea, we are beginning to turn all 9 of these in a pretty successful way with adult education. But the reality is, it just takes time. But I think, as you could see from some of the data that Adrienne Ann shared, that we're making some significant progress in that regard. The state approval process has been a problem for community colleges for many years, and in fact, even in the process that Adrienne Ann mentioned, has been streamlined in recent years, and it's actually faster than it has been, and there's continued effort to do that.
Non-credit curriculum
takes
longer than credit.
It does, but we're trying to make progress on that as well. On top of all this is the shift to the student-centered funding formula, which is focused on access, equity, and what they call success, but it's really performance-based. That has had its first launch this year. The governor has, Governor Brown, on his way out the door, finalized the appointment of a SCFF oversight committee of 4 representatives by the governor, 4 by the state assembly, 4 by the state senate. This is a very disparate group of individuals. I know at least 4 of them quite well, and it's a group of presidents, outside people who've been involved in the community college world and serving underrepresented populations for many, many years, and just 1 faculty member, which I think is interesting. But the bottom line to all that is, it's going to be at least another 2 years before anything significant comes out of those discussions in terms of any changes as it relates to the formula. One thing that they did do is they slowed the formula down for a year, and they decreased the amount of money that would be allocated to performance, and they left it at the 10% level because they recognize that the definition of performance, the quality of the data that they get from the colleges on up and from the state on down, is somewhat suspect in many respects. So everybody is learning how to create the appropriate metrics to measure all of these things. We're definitely in a world of accountability at the community colleges. For those of us who have been doing this for a while, you can go back to the first George Bush when they first started talking about accountability. And now here we are coming out of the Obama era into the Trump era, and still accountability is a big, big part of our world. Uh-huh. And so we as a district are really focusing in on that aspect of what we need to do. The commitment of the district from the top of the food chain continues. So the chancellor now has our vice chancellor of institutional effectiveness Educational Programs Institutional Effectiveness, Ryan Corner, as well as myself, actively engaged in the adult education arena. Ryan now works very closely with Adrian Ann on all things curriculum institutional research, and I continue in the realm here on this body, but also from the financing point of view and the support that we need. There's a great, great deal of additional investment that goes into adult education in our district beyond just the AEP dollars that we get, and that will continue. One of the things that I continue to question, frankly, is our investment in the innovation and in the counseling area. I know that Adrian Ann and others think it's very important. I agree it is too, but what my concern is that every dollar that we get out of AEP dollars actually gets somehow to the students in some effective way. And so I, for one, continue to want to see evidence that, in fact, those investments are what they want to do. I'm very pleased to say that when we started this, at least when I started this roughly 3 years ago, our presidents were not as supportive of this initiative as we might have wanted them to be. I can say that all seven of our permanent presidents and the two interims are also... that Queen Mary has turned rapidly, and they now are all very supportive of this. Yet, from a fiscal point of view and from an auditing point of view, we track those AEP dollars very closely to make sure that those dollars actually get spent in adult education. In prior years, maybe those dollars were not all spent the way that they should have been, but I can assure you now that they all are. Adult education continues to be a major growth opportunity in our district, and it's not just growth from a fiscal point of view, but it's growth from a service delivery and a student success perspective. 86% of our students are classified. When I say that, it's 240,000, 250,000 students a year. 86% are classified as first-generation underrepresented low-income. Close to 60% are below the poverty level. The students that go to LACCD are among the neediest in the nation by far, and we're very proud of the fact that we're here to serve in a manner that a lot of other districts and folks may not be as able as we are. So we understand what our mission is and what our vision is, and we understand the importance of our job. Remember, 2-3 years ago, you know, Joe and I talked about HISET, and nobody was doing any HISET in our district, right? And now we've got that significant under control. So I guess I'll leave it at that. We attempted with this PowerPoint to kind of give you a quick overview. We will provide it electronically to Lansing. Lansing can then distribute it to the group. And I guess we're open to any questions that you may have.
So we're actually not going to do questions.
Then we're not open to a darn question. No one should even attempt.
So the goal?
Because we will not answer.
I'm hoping that as you guys are listening, you're writing down your questions and requests for additional information at some point. But we all know what happens the minute we start that conversation. So we want to just make sure we get everybody's input about the different things before we go. So, thanks, Bob.
Thank you.
And Adrian. Mm-hmm. Okay, who wants to go next? LA, USA?
Yeah, just a couple quick points, actually. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, just in terms of what, you know, we would want to communicate from LA, USD. It's been interesting for me, you know, having worked mostly in smaller districts and then, you know, in LA, USD. Obviously, it's a very large district. But I think there, in some cases, I've noticed there's kind of a perception that, well, because it's big, the quality isn't there. And I can tell you, having worked in LAUSD the last few years, one of the things that's been, you know, quite a point of pride for me in getting to know the program more, the teaching staff, the school staff, the quality of our programs is, I think, some of the best you'll find. And I think some of the examples that we've seen in the consortium, whether it's Family Success Initiative, Integrated Education, really are some examples of how we're really digging in and sinking our teeth into this whole idea of innovating and really using these dollars for their intended purpose and not just same old, but really trying to push forward with innovation and really meeting the needs of our students. So a big consideration, and Bob mentioned it a little earlier, is, you know, we're not going to be able to increase or keep the quality of our programs without the staff. And so one of the challenges we've had in LAUSD is around, you know, how do we ensure that we're maintaining our full-time equivalent, particularly teaching staff and other, you know, administrative staff and so forth, because without those folks, we're not going to have the quality of the programs, I believe, that we need. Again, there's a role for part-time staff, but at the same time, you know, without a core group of folks that are full-time, the quality just isn't going to be there. So I think that's a big consideration as we're looking at this issue of funding, is, you know, looking across the consortium in terms of tracking, you know, our full-time equivalent teachers and staff, and I agree with what Bob said earlier about counselors. You know, we should certainly make that a priority in the consortium in terms of, you know, whether they're actually counselors or transition specialists, whatever we want to call them, making a commitment to maintain and if at all possible, expand staff in that area. Because I think as we look at, you know, what is the sweet spot for LARIC? It's not that we're all going to expand, right? We shouldn't all be going out and expanding the same programs, right? Because there's a limited pool of students, really. It should be looking at what are the things that we each do best and then working with all of us in terms of how do we leverage that expertise so that we're not trying to reinvent the wheel, right? You know, again, you know, HISET testing was mentioned, and we do a lot of that. So I guess looking for opportunities not to duplicate, but really kind of leveraging the expertise that and capacity that's already there. So that's one issue around staffing. The other is, I kind of mentioned it a little bit, LAUSD's relationship to LARIC. So, you know, obviously LAUSD has its own, you know, plans and strategies and internal issues that we're looking at. But again, I just want to make sure in this next cycle that we're going through with funding and planning that we really are looking to not supplant, but rather supplement and enhance what we're already doing and not trying to recreate necessarily and duplicate programs. Really kind of looking at it more in terms of regionally what's already being offered. And then if new programs in this adult ed arena are coming online, making sure that we're not, you know, sort of putting resources into something that may already exist, but really creating more of that pipeline and transition piece that I think we still have a long way to go. So focusing on student outcomes, transitions, balancing innovation, obviously, with, you know, the pressures that we're all under. We're all chasing enrollment, you know, some of us funded, you know, FTS and so forth, but how do we really, because I think this is one of the big sort of threats to adult ed, at least on the K-12 side. How do we as a collective body do more to influence, particularly at the state level, moving beyond this sort of side categorical type status, which is sort of where we're at. We're sort of seen as this sort of supplement to, at least in K-12, not necessarily part of the core program. those. Of course, we're not funded out of LCFF. So I think if we're going to really take it to the next level and continue to be relevant and last for the long term, I think, you know, I'd like to see us maybe as a very powerful group of districts here really work more at the state level as well, you know, with regard to funding and other maybe legislative issues too. You know, how do we move beyond just sort of this set aside categorical status more to we're a core component of the educational program? So some of us were at a conference and I don't know, was it the three-legged stool or the four-legged stool? I don't know what it was. But the idea that you
have... stool.
Yeah. The idea that you have, you know, one leg obviously is sort of the K-12, traditional, you know, you have the community college, and then you have adult ed, which is really the third leg of the stool, and it's not not seen as kind of this, you know, again, kind of a little... set aside, you know, hey, if it went away, no big deal, somebody would take it on kind of thing, but really more that this is a core program statewide that, you know, really is a strong component to a healthy community college and K-12 system. So those were my...
So, and I forgot to ask this a little bit earlier, is there anybody else besides Dr. Miller and Dr. Mullen that are here from
Bob
the community.
And Adrian Ann.
But that's what I. Oh, good. Bob and Adrian Ann. Is there anybody else?
Or
the
Chuck and Adrian Ann, whatever.
whatever works. From the community college. Okay. So anybody else from LAUSD that would like to share any considerations again along the lines of what we're talking about, about other schools or whatever, but things about LAUSD considerations that you would like us to have. Ms. Chartier?
Yeah. So I just wanted to speak a little bit regarding the concerns around the quality of LAUSD's data and TE, the quality of the integrity of our data. What most member districts probably don't realize is because of our size, our WIOA Title II program is audited every year. So over the last 15 years, we've developed strategies, protocols, procedures to help ensure the quality and integrity of our data. Some of those things include having proctoring certification forms that all of the teachers sign. We just implemented having entry and update certification forms that all of the teachers sign, which basically say they've gotten training on how to give the assessment, how to implement EL Civics, how to instruct students in filling out the entry and update form. And then we also have a quarterly data scrub that is done at each school site. And then the advisors there certify the data, share it with their principals, share what they found with their principals, and then the principals certify the data, and they sign off on it and submit that to central office. So these strategies and protocols have also been adapted by the California Department of Correctional Rehabilitation. So it's a very robust process and procedure. And the other thing is, we don't cherry pick who gets the COSLIS test. Everybody gets that test. They get a pretest. We use it as a formative assessment. We use it to help to create our instructional program. And then they get it as a summative assessment. Everybody. It's not just, we don't just stop giving the test once somebody gains an ESL. So I just wanted to make sure that everybody was aware that we feel very good about our data, and that we certify our data every year. And if you would like to have any of the procedures or protocols or any of the paperwork that I'm sharing, I'm happy to share it.
Matthew, I'm just gonna guess.
I normally don't like to speak.
Wait. What's your name?
Matthew Kogan. I'm an ESL teacher at LAUSD in Evans, and I'm also the director of adult education for United Teachers Los Angeles, and I chair the adult education committee for California Federation of Teachers, which, despite the title, includes non-credit community college instructors. And I have many things to say, but I'll just comment. Joe's talking about at the state level, and of course, our relationship with the state is, I wouldn't say all important, but I mean a crucial part of a state-funded institutions. And just a thought, I mean, as long as we're, when you think of us as part of the K-12 system, we're not really a good use of K-12 money. We don't really educate third graders particularly well. I mean, LA screams about large class size. We, if you consider us a part of that pot of money, we make class size worse. The state doesn't care about Delta, they care about our students. They care deeply about our students. If you go down the list of the planning for the formerly known as the block grant, you know, these are the desires of our students. And I think we need to keep closely to that. And I think counseling is essential. Well, I say that for two reasons. One, you can't read about a successful program that's using innovative things, you know, combining, you know, basic skills with advanced skills, getting people from ESL quickly through CTE. They all seem to emphasize in the literature the essential and central role of counseling. So this week, someone came around, passed out individual counseling forms, and gave a presentation. And one of my students is a bit shy and asked him, what's he going to do? And he says he doesn't know. He's kind of lost. He has a master's degree in accounting. And I don't want that guy who has no idea what to do. I told him to go to LACC counseling, actually. but we're not there yet. I think it's easy to gloss over the needs. Every student's not going to need in-depth counseling. But they are going to need some career counseling. They've come to a new country, or they're poor. They're poor probably because they're not navigating the system, or their family or social network aren't navigating the system in an optimal way. I think the state has made it clear that they want us to do it. It's in the LAO report, and it's in all the laws. And I'd like us to grow into that, and I'd like us also, I don't know why, we should be pushing that as a payment point, as an easy way to pay for those counselors. Let's get paid for doing the job the state wants, and our students.
Thank you.
That's good.
Anybody else? L.A.? Yeah.
Quickly on the point of counseling, my name is Lorena Sevilla. I am a child development instructor and a CTE program advisor. I'm actually moved by the students. On counseling, I think that sometimes we see, in my experience coming here and going to college, you get lost in the counseling pool. When you go to college, sometimes you get lost. But there are so many students going to college that it doesn't matter. But in adult education, we make a difference every time we counsel a student. We can change the way they live and the way they react to life. Something I think is important, very important, especially because of the people that we serve. Thank you.
Any? Okay. Ballard, Burbank, or Culver City. I'm talking to myself. Burbank.
Yeah, so good morning, everybody. I actually outlined, I don't have a PowerPoint, I could create one, but I outlined everything for us here this morning to make sure that I'm on point and not wandering all over the place. So, funding for adult education is as complex an issue for adult education as it is for K-12 and higher education. Describing funding as a formula while sounding scientific and fortified through elaborate matrix does not take into account the complexity of adult education programs. This is especially the case when you take into account non-traditional students and continuing education. Any funding allocation that is developed must take into consideration fixed costs for operations and negotiated salary increases, along with increases in health and welfare benefits. Therefore, base funding must account for all of these costs and cannot be founded on outdated figures. Another key tenet of funding allocation is that of allowing member districts the ability to be creative and develop new programs. While funding is tied to a strict matrix, it stymies creativity and the flexibility to implement new programs. Therefore, it would not take into account the cost of staffing, equipment, and materials and supplies for these new programs. For Burbank, these would consist of, but are not limited to, the development of an LBN program, of which we are in the midst of the approval process and looking to initiate the program in the spring of 2020. Infusing technology across all program areas, including student assessments. Providing guidance services to students where goals are defined, pathways outlined, and resources and supports identified. Improving instruction and opportunities for students with disabilities. Branching out to all portions of our community by bringing classes and programs to satellite locations, such as low-income housing developments. The costs associated with maintaining quality CTE programs, which involve staffing, equipment, and supplies. So that is a list of what our considerations are.
Thank you. Burbank, anybody from Burbank? Yes. Anything so, you want to?
In the other's defense, he has no idea about the status. I'm Julia Mendlin. I'm the office manager at the Burbank Adult School. And the things that come to mind for me is that I would like to see Burbank be able to have more classified support staff. With the development of all this accountability for all of this funding, which is absolutely necessary, the job on all of us support staff has increased, I think, tenfold, and I think probably everybody in here realizes that. We're working really hard to keep up with the accountability of it, but that job would be so much easier for all of us if there was more support staff for us to work with them. That said, also, I would love to see us have a tech person on site in the evening. Right now we have a full-time tech person during the day, but we have night classes. As you all know, things happen in the evening as well. And it would be nice if the custodian or the supervisor for that evening wasn't the one having to run into the classroom to help with that technology issue. So I think that would be very helpful. And the other thing that just overall, almost 90% of our teachers are part-time. And it's hard to hold on to them when they only get 2.5 hours a day or 3 hours a day. And I think it would be wonderful if we could somehow expand our program to, I don't know that we could go to full-time teachers, but at least more hours for those teachers and not burn out the good ones that we have because they've got 2 and 3 assignments so that they can survive. So if there would be a way for us to do that, and I don't even know what that looks like, but, I would just like us to be able to see to hold on to people instead of it being that job that they have on the side while they're trying to survive as well.
Okay.
That's my thoughts.
Thank you. Montebello, you ready?
How you doing?
Hi.
I have to stand up because I drank 2.5 cups of coffee and I'm already
and such a pretty dress.
I know.
So we're all I have my quinceañera dress in the car.
Are you the quinceañera?
I don't. I forgot it. Usually when I do PowerPoint, I'm sorry, I really am anti-PowerPoint, but I know we have to do them, so I usually just bring my big finger and I said, this is my PowerPoint. I used to do trainings like that. So basically what I wanted to tell you today was we're all here to meet in the, with the largest consortium in California. I'm here today to tell you that this past week in particular, the past 2 days have been an eye-opening experience by attending the CAIEA conference in Sacramento. I would like to personally thank everyone who was involved in the planning and execution of this event. I know it's difficult, the planning and the timing. And so especially, I know a lot of LAUSD people were involved, and of course, my Madam Chairperson here. I wanted to
I'm going to be sad when I lose that title, I'm just telling you.
The conference is not only informative, uplifting, and relevant to LARIC as a whole, to begin the discussion to restructure. The conference was informative, uplifting, and relevant to LARIC. Because it's that's why we're here, to discuss, to restructure our three-year planning and the reason why we're here today. The conference, to me, this is just my opinion, was designed with the theme of what we need to do to increase our money in adult education by advocating with our legislators, our community, and our staff. We realized the importance of capturing data to validate our programs. But as we heard from time to time again in the conference and other adult ed meetings that I attended, the data does not give us the total picture. One of the presenters commented on the outcomes-driven funding, quote, it takes many years to get it right. And that data-driven on the amount of money that ties to money can be disincentivity. You know, that's disincentivity. There you go. Thank you.
It's a tongue twister.
So the philosophy of funding is kind of what we're here for, and I truly believe that sometimes we must realize that some adult learners won't go on to a career pathway or attend college, but nevertheless, we need to realize that data doesn't give the total picture. What I mean by that is through adult education, they are attaining lifelong learning skills that will be with them for the rest of their life and enables them to pass on to their children, which will prepare them to take charge of their future. Going back to the informative and action-packed CAIEA conference, although every single person who presented spoke on important issues, I have to say the one time I heard a roar from the entire group was when one of the sponsors, I forgot her name, but thanked Assemblyman McCarty from Sacramento for his commitment to adult education funding. She spoke about the fact that her father completed his high school diploma program and in Compton and earned his bachelor's and master's at UCLA. Phil? UCLA?
Yes.
Which brought the awareness down to her and her family and her siblings, and she received her bachelor's at UCLA and her master's at USC. Everyone in the room roared after her compelling and heartfelt thank you to adult education and educators, such as people that are here and are attending this meeting, because this has ultimately changed her future, and it was amazing. It was amazing. I too want to share with you what Montebello Community Adult School has done for my father, Manuel Hawkins. He was from El Paso, Texas, living with two sisters and one brother and a single mom. He enrolled himself in first grade in El Paso, Texas, because his mother was illiterate, embarrassed to go to the school, and working 15-hour days. He came to Los Angeles at age 21, right after his stint in the Korean War, Chosin Reservoir, where he said from time to time that that was the best experience he had because he had clothes on his back and food in his stomach. He worked odd jobs and enrolled in the Montebello Community Adult School, high school diploma program. And in 1967, my father graduated from Montebello Community Adult School. This is the artifact. I'll pass it around. I'm proud of him. He then became a police officer. That's why he wanted his high school diploma. But he learned that service was his key. I think that's part of what I'm part of. And so service was important to him and his calling. And he retired after 32 years from working at Vaughn's Pavilion as a meat cutter with a great pension. One of my other sisters I have two sisters that attended. One of them was a CNA class. This is back in the 70s. This is kind of a relic, so I won't pass it around. But this is my sister Irene in 1972, 5 years later. So my dad graduated in 67, my sister in 72, in CNA program. She completed the course, and that's where she found her love for working with people that needed a lot more care and love. So she ended up working at Montebello Unified School District as a special education instructional aide for special needs for 28 years. And just recently, she actually polished up or brushed off her shoulders and worked as a CNA, used her CNA skills while my mother was in hospice. Every day she was there helping out. I have another sister. She took the typing class with one of our teachers that is still teaching. She's been teaching this class for 48 years, Miss Hatley, at Montebello.
You took that.
My sister took this class 30 years ago and typed up to 90 words a minute and became a 911 dispatcher. And was able to retire at age 45 and live happily with, in Yucca Valley with her husband. I finally want to mention my mother. She was born as a homemaker. That's why that lady said, I hate to cry, but thank goodness. She was born in East LA, East Los Angeles, California. She was number 14 of 17 children. She graduated from Roosevelt High School in Boyle Heights and raised all of us in Montebello, all five of us. The only time she had that little peace of mind was when her and her two best friends, Lolly and Virginia, would attend the fitness program, adult education, back in the late 1960s. She always looked forward to those Thursday evenings for 2 hours. Now, 1 hour was for working out, and the other hour was so that they could go to the fast food place. So her friends could eat the burritos, and my mom always chose the soft-serve ice cream. This is what Montebello Community Adult School has brought to my family's life, my life, and many others, and more generations to come. I must ask the question, what is the reason why we're here today on Saturday? I would hope the reason is for Larrick as a whole. That we might, this might be a cliche. I was thinking about it, and I said, Alice, don't say it. United we stand, divided we fall. I don't know what else to say. We need to look at what's best for Larrick. Instead of focusing on one specific member, we need to work on how can we make each other stronger. Because we are here to support each other, to help our communities continue lifelong learners, which will benefit our communities as a whole.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Anybody? So we have some Montebello people. Anybody else want to jump on that? That was pretty awesome.
It's hard to follow that. But I just want to say that we're committed to, as a whole, we are committed to strengthening our programs, serving our underserved areas, echoing what everyone else has said, increasing access to technology for all our students, and then really developing new programs. It's been mentioned before that what we do well is really looking at employability programs, our quick hits, as Michelle and Justin have termed them, programs, and we're committed to expanding those and expanding the pathways to go beyond just to work and to more long-term employment. And so we're expanding our partnerships. We're be writing MOUs next week for a few new sites for our personal care aid. We're expanding our job programs, and as Ms. Hawkins said, we're committed to being a good partner with our area. Thank you.
Anybody else?
Just a very quick, I spoke last at the last meeting, but I want to publicly thank Alice and Phil. They walked into a very challenging situation in Montebello, and I'm one of the veteran staff there, and what they have put in place, what they've implemented, is brings us to a season of growth, which is really great. They've turned the tide and sort of the staff now, and I'm going to speak for staff, turn the tide in terms of we're looking at the future. We're not just looking at survival, we're looking at growth, and we're looking at some very positive things happening right now, going into the future, and we are here to support them, and we really thank them for the support of the programs we have in building this back up.
Thank you. So I have just a few things for Culver City in terms of the consideration. I think that Emilio hit a little bit on it, I think, when he talked about what the basic needs of any program are. I think you referred to it as fixed costs, some of those things that we have to have in order to be able to even operate any kind of school. And one of the things is that when you're this small in Culver City, and I know that my loudness, sometimes
creates a perception that we're bigger in terms of numbers than we are. but really, it's a consideration. We are physically small in terms of the space that we have, and we have a small school district that only has 5 elementary schools, 1 middle school, and 1 high school. So our intent is never to grow all over the place. You know, a few partnerships with some of our elementary schools and middle school. So I just want everybody to know that when we talk about what Culver City needs, we really are talking about a very basic program and some of those fixed costs. So we've never had an AP in Culver City, and that's really, really challenging. So that's one of the things, and security is another thing that we put in. And so because it was a concern that staff had about feeling safe, right? And so a couple of little things that we've tried to put in place that have taken a long time. As you all know, with your HR systems, anything takes sometimes a long friggin' time, man. It took me forever to convince the district, and then now it's taking this long to get it going. So, and then also that the idea that our salaries are increasing at a rate much quicker than the additional money, and by the way, other than the data and accountability money, there's been no additional money really with AEBG, AEP, and LP. So by the way, here's a new word. In the CAIA conference, they're referring to the CAEP as CAPE. So just think of ourselves as superheroes, the kids, student superheroes with the CAPE. So the reality is that COLA has not anywhere, I mean, we didn't even get COLA. We didn't have an increase in funding for 7 years, right? I can tell you that I work in an amazing district. Laura was a board member there, and they had done better with their money than a lot of districts, so they were giving raises to try to get Culver City to the median, just to the median of where teachers were. And that was all awesome, right? It's friggin' amazing. The K-12 teachers were loving it. The adult school teachers are me too, so they get it. But guess what? I didn't get any more money. Just because LCFF was doing well for our district, it didn't do anything for my adult ed side. And so this expansion, this increase in fact, nobody ever wanted to come to work for Culver City, really, from LA. And then all of a sudden, people started to hear through Larrick how much my teachers made. And then there was this, hey, wait a minute. Right? So just that consideration that we have. And again, it's not your fault, but it's not our fault either. And we shouldn't have teachers that have to leave because that funding increased at a rate that our consortium or that the adult ed funding at the state level didn't increase, right? So I'm not even talking really about huge expansion, right? I'm talking about being able to continue to operate what we've operated successfully. And I know that Joe, when he talks about, or when we talk about not the same old or new, he's not talking about that the successful things we do the same shouldn't continue. We all should do the successful things we're doing. Those should absolutely continue. And then sometimes, and thank you to LAUSD for the FSI presentation and then the training I sent people to, because sometimes we need to reconsider where we're using our existing money. So there's the idea that we want to expand some things and there should be some opportunity for that. But there should also be, from my perspective, I look at my existing funding and I go, okay, if this is not working so well, where can I shift that to something to be innovative too, right? Like, so there's that piece of it. And then, yeah, those are the kind of considerations just from our end. As I used to say when I was much more petite, I would say, pequeña pero picosa. Culver City is pequeña pero picosa.
Can you translate that? I'm sorry.
Yeah, I was
going to
say.
Oh.
Small but spicy.
Thank you.
And just in case you guys haven't figured out that I'm spicy. Thank you all for sharing. I think that this was really valuable in just creating a context for each other. right? And that, again, that's the idea. So the next step is really to look.
Yes. Would it be appropriate for me to share something on behalf of the consortium?
Sure. Oh, yeah. So other considerations, duh. I'm sorry, Lassie.
Yeah, and, you know, I have to tell you that I am moved by the stories that we heard at the conference, but the stories that we hear at the table today. I think none of us would be here were it not for a strong commitment to adult education. I am proud to call myself a product of adult education. And so, you know, I take all of these very personally. But at the same time, part of my duties make me, if nothing else, point out to all of you fine executive directors, you know, executive board members, some of the responsibilities that the consortium has acquired through time, right? The consortium was made a part of an audit report from Montebello back in November 2nd of 2017. As part of that report, recommendations 31 and 32 were specifically to the Los Angeles Regional Adult Education Consortium, and we needed to provide certain, we need to take certain actions as a consequence of that. So we have presented three responses 2 months after we did one response, which you all approved. 6 months after, we did a second response, which again you all approved. And 12 months later, this is back in November, we did yet another response, which you all approved. Part of that response, or among, you know, the what we have indicated that we were going to do, is to develop, in so many words, I'm just going to paraphrase, is to develop you know, data-driven formula that addresses some of the issues that were found and that were given to the consortium to address via recommendations 31 and 32. As you all know, because I emailed you a letter from the state, we will be made part of a report that is being aired out on the 12th, which will indicate that, in my opinion, because I have not seen the report, that we have not completed our work. And as we are working towards doing, as we're talking about the next 3 years, and we're talking about funding allocations, then we also need to keep that in mind and in context, such that we are once and for all released from the state auditor's office report, and we no longer have to contend with that. The letter indicated that, you know, the easiest way to remove oneself from the state auditor's radar, if you will, is to implement the recommendations that they had for us. I know that some of my statements are general, and I purposely want to leave them general, but I think that this is a crucial and important issue that the consortium needs to address as we move forward. Thank you.
And just so yes, I mean, just to say that we do, we have the Montebello audit recommendations, and I think that, and actually I will, just for purposes of this, I actually went through too, so I'm gonna read the exact language, just so we know what the exact language is. Complete an assessment of Montebello's ability to meet the requirements of its adult ed plan to determine whether its use of state funds has been effective. If Montebello is found to be consistently ineffective, the consortia should immediately recalculate the adult program fund allocation for the future. Number two, develop policies and procedures to ensure the proper collection and reporting of enrollment, attendance, and expenditure data by consortium members. Periodically review enrollment, attendance, and expenditure data to ensure accuracy. So those are the exact words on the Montebello audit. So I just wanted to, I know it, you wanted to use general, but I, since I had them here, I think it's good to know what all the words say. Mm-hmm. Yes.
So I would like to ask a question. It could be rhetorical for the moment, or we could talk about it, whatever the chair cares to do. What are the consequences to LARIC if we don't do what the auditor is saying, if we don't comply? In other words, is there any teeth behind this audit, or is it just... Because it came out of the LAO, right? Where did it come from? The CDE?
It was an audit report that was issued by the state auditor's office.
But which state? Is it the Department of Finance?
California State Auditor.
I think we have to determine. I believe the executive committee needs to determine, have they met it or not?
Well, that may be, but I'm just curious as to what the consequences are of not complying. I'd like to get an answer to that at some point.
Okay. That's a great question. Great question. Okay, so the next piece is for each of the districts to share kind of their perspectives on some of the criteria elements that have been discussed. You know, just it's just your thoughts. Again, you're not defending. Nobody's going to challenge. And this is why we're not going back and forth. It's because, but why this or why that? You're just presenting what your perspective on what some of those different criteria are. So we've had, some of them have been base and a 16 gazillion versions of base, whether it's enrollment, whether it's instructional hours 1, instructional hours 12. It's been a conversation about last year's or the existing funding numbers. Like, their base has been a lot of stuff. We've talked about equity. Barriers, that's been a big thing that's come up. We've talked about success, kind of outcomes, and innovation, new programs. There was some stuff in the student-centered formula from the Hanover Report. Again, there have been a lot of different things. What we're looking for is for us to hear from each other, kind of what are your thoughts about what some of those criteria what do you think about some of those criteria? Anybody want to go first?
Well, I like what I heard earlier, and it's something that I was also thinking of and pondering, and especially so after I read the Hanover report. And that is, I've only been an adult ed guy for about 5 years. Prior to that, my entire experience, 35 years in education, 30 of it was at the high school level. At the high school level, the K-12 funding was always pretty consistent. There was, if you were not doing well, the state didn't take money away from you. In fact, it was quite the opposite. They created programs and provided more funding and dollars to you to improve the quality of instruction. It would only be if the state intervened and took over that district that then there would be some financial, possibly revisions or repercussions. I don't see adult ed like that at all. It's almost like it's off on its own, not given the full consideration that K-12 and higher education is. Now, I'm not here crying as a victim, because I don't like victim mentality. But that's, from my perception, that's where we're at. And so now, we're trying to come up with a formula with the amount that we're given, which hasn't really increased, other than for some categorical needs, such as data and accountability, that really need to take into account what the costs, the fixed costs are. And I say fixed costs, but that's a misnomer, because those fixed costs increase. So when a district negotiates a salary increase with the associations, that cost has to be taken from somewhere. And it's taken out of the same amount of money that we have. So I think that we need to really look at that complexity before we go down a path of looking at a formula that doesn't take into account all of that. And base funding, too, is a misnomer. And we need to look at what that actually means and how those figures were derived and when they were derived. Because if you recall, when this was originally done, it was through a survey that was conducted, I believe, in 2012-13, that the state asked for all districts to participate in the survey. And again, I've got questions about how that whole process took place. But I really think, given that we're the largest consortium, what we should do, and I like what Mr. Stark said earlier, we really need to look at bringing this forward to our legislature, to our lobbyists, whomever they may be, about what these dynamics are, because they don't really know. And they're as foreign to adult education, by the way, as I was as a snobby high school principal that thought that adult education was for those people, not for my kids. And now I've done a lot of growing and maturing and looking at this program was much more than what I conceived it as that academic snob that sat at the high school. So that's for me a huge issue that I think we need to look at individually, but I like what Veronica said, or maybe it was Dr. Mullen, which is as a consortium.
So, anybody? But we're not. So I'm going to wait till I get to LASU. What I don't want to do is have the discussion. So if we can get to,
Yeah.
Does that make sense? So I really appreciate you guys, you know, kind of going along with this format. I know it's hard. I know you want to jump in. Okay. Anybody want to go next in terms of criteria or thoughts?
Well, just a quick tag on with what Emilio said.
Well, we're watching you closely, Joe. Can't break the rules.
Just to kind of amen what Emilio said and really just look at this as, you know, I mean, if we're going to treat it as a zero-sum game, then I think we're actively doing harm to adult ed in our region. So we don't have enough dollars. We need more. You know, and so I think we should, you know, with whatever we come up with, even if it's like a phased-in approach, I mean, I think that was helpful in the Hanover report, was kind of looking at, you know, you don't have to crack the nut all at once. I mean, you can take bites and phase it in if that's the direction you want to go. But I think we should also be working parallel, you know, with regard to really bringing the power of the consortium to bear to really influence state policy in terms of what do we want the funding to be, not being satisfied with what it is and then trying to figure it out at the local level. Let's kind of leapfrog it if we can, in parallel to kind of working at the consortium level.
Can I bring up one more thing, which is completely in sync with what Joe just said here, as an example? I know she's loud, and I can be loud too. I mean, Veronica.
Just in case you were.
If you recall, at the summit, several times, and at other open arenas, we spoke up, and I know I did, about AEBG and how the use of that term and that acronym was misleading to districts. And what do we get back? I'm not going to name names. I'm not into that. But what I got back, okay, is I'm like tell it like it is guy, was I got political pablum back from the powers that be. They were polite in their responses because they were protecting their six-figure salaries. I get that, okay? But there was nothing done. It continued, but what happened is if we continue to raise it up, if we continue to address the issue, the districts were not granting tenure to people because of the term AEBG and the word grant in there. Maybe not for Burbank, maybe not for LA, but there were districts in California who were definitely doing it. And because we raised that issue continually, wasn't just me, other people, what happened?
It's now a program.
It got changed. I would submit to you that if we continue to yank the chain of all those pointy heads and bureaucrats and let them know that the $500 million is not sufficient and keep repeating it over and over and over, something's going to give. Because the squeaky wheel gets the grease.
So,
and it's not like we're not doing what we're supposed to be doing.
Right. So one of the things that I hear, and I think Joe mentioned it a little bit right before we started, is that there is definitely a legislative advocacy piece around funding that we can engage in. And I think that that makes the perfect sense for it being exactly our next workshop, because that's where we're at. We just came from a conference where our state organizations are also looking at funding. So it makes perfect sense, right? I think it makes perfect sense. To continue this, so we'll schedule that before we leave to have that one, but in order to continue, and it could be wherever you are with the existing or some of those funding criteria, if you have a point of view on any of those funding criteria. But in terms of the push legislatively and making the change and using our collective power to influence legislation and policy, I think that's definitely, I think that needs to happen for sure. And I think we do have it, and we have a little bit more information now, too, from the organizations, kind of at least what they're thinking, and then what we can do, if it's similar or different or whatever, but we can go from there. Yes. Oh, you ready?
You want a thought?
I want your perspectives on criteria.
Yeah, so I agree with the Montebello presentation that we have to focus on the social justice needs of what we're all about here. And we have to recognize that the lifting up of all adult ed students not only has a payoff in terms of focusing on the literacy, breaking cycles of poverty, but it has a very significant economic development perspective. And I think when we do the legislative things that we're talking about doing, I think to the degree that we have a dual message of social justice and economic development, that would make sense. Mm-hmm. So in relation to the funding criteria, I think we have to make sure that we remember that everybody has a mission, everybody has a purpose. I was very touched by the Montebello faculty members' comments over here. I apologize, I don't remember your name. That's rude of me. Sorry about that. But when you said that things were stabilizing, the faculty and staff were feeling good about the new leadership, and that, you know, that issue was, that things were happening, I think that criteria that does provide a hold harmless period or an opportunity to allow the improvement to take place is an important concept that we need to bear in mind. If in fact things are moving in the right direction, we should celebrate that, honor that, respect that, and help them get through that. And in a period of 2 or 3 years, if the ship has turned and the funding needs to continue at a certain level, great. If it hasn't, then we make an adjustment. Now, I'm not advocating necessarily that they keep getting all that they got, because I don't know the numbers per se, but I do know that we need to be very cognizant of their mission and their purpose and the things that they're trying to accomplish there. So I think that any kind of funding modifications needs to include some kind of a hold harmless thought.
I'm sorry, Matthew, I should have called you after Joe. Do you want to throw something in terms of
independent
the...
independent of Joe, by the way.
Yes, yeah, so I can vouch for
together.
That.
You are, but you're speaking for LAUSD.
A couple things. I just wanted to jump in on Sacramento issues. Of course, we want more money for adult ed. Sacramento can give the wrong impression. You talk to lawmakers, and they don't know. And they're very polite. And a kind of stereotype is you go and you ask many times. This is not going to get us to the promised land. lawmakers might in front of you not want to be committal. Their experts are extremely knowledgeable about what's going on, who are advising them. So the idea that they don't know when we come in there. And by the way, some of the representatives for adult ed are known to ask for more money for have a reputation for asking for more money for less work. That's the reputation we have. That's the ground we're on now. They're asking us for certain things from the beginning. So we might want to ask for more money, but we might want to show an interest in doing what they've asked us to, like the, I know it's a hard one, but the shared data. There is a good reason for that from a Sacramento point of view. The counseling, the accelerated learning. So if we act like we can't find a way to do that, which has been done in other states successfully, but we want more money, it's not a great message. We've got to show an interest in what they want. It's their money. They're actually, and it's their constituents. And you guys aren't a constituency, really. You're advising, you're a point of view from the people running a program, which is has great validity, but you're not a constituency in the same way. You might want to work with those constituencies to, you know, voters, in other words.
Thank you. So, can I throw some stuff in to this mix? So, Culver City. So, just and it's interesting because I think we almost could have started with the last question about when we might start, and then that could have, because if I'm hearing a little bit of hold harmless, a little bit of hold harmless, a little bit of hold harmless. Are we talking? I guess I'm going to ask this question now. Is there anybody thinking that this formula, whatever, or this, however, formula way to distribute is something that they want for 1920? Or are we thinking beyond 1920?
Well, this gets us. This gets us back to the consequences question.
I think
we need an answer to that. That will help us. Three big takeaways so far: legislative advocacy should be biggest consideration. Leverage our size and influence. This is my thought. Work with local boards and districts. Need to advocate for a share of local funds. I mean, somehow, some way, your district should be recognizing the importance of what it is that you provide to your communities, and therefore, beyond LEREC, you should get some additional funds. I don't know if we can help each individual district with those messages, but maybe that's something we can do. And then, as I mentioned earlier, the need to focus on social justice and economic development themes. I was very struck by what Matthew just said, is that it is the legislative staff who really knows what's going on up there, and everything that you just said is absolutely correct. They need hard evidence that these results that we speak to, everything from bleeding hearts to actuality, is actually happening. And then they'll probably be happy to provide some additional monies. But right now, it's just we are now lining up with a new governor behind a bunch of causes that the new governor doesn't necessarily feel. I mean, his emphasis right now is on early childhood education and you know, universal health care and preschool. And so somehow we've got to get our voice heard, and the only way to do that is with hard evidence that, in fact, what we're doing is actually doing something. That's, and then finding some, a legislator or legislators with a true voice and influence to lead the charge. Identify who that persons or persons are and work hard with their staff and provide them the evidence they need and just plow through it. But at the same time, I think the local districts do have an obligation to provide something. You know, everybody's right. COLAs don't even come close to covering what we need. Yes, the COLA for next year is 3.46%, and yes, adult ed is going to get 3.46%, but they really need 6-7%. So where's that difference going to come from? Well, it's either got to come from a bigger pot or from the local districts.
Yeah, I would just say your original question regarding implementing anything for 1920, I think from a fiscal and human resource practical standpoint, I don't see how that's possible.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because I know in OASC we've already pretty much wrapped up our budget, and we're already working with principals on scheduling and everything else. So the idea that there would be some significant change to that could impact funding for 1920, I don't believe would give districts enough time to go through all the hoops they have to go through to implement that. So that's my opinion.
So I'm going to throw out some of just my things on Culver City's on criteria, and then can I go to you?
Sure.
Yeah. I don't mean to go last every time. Do you have some more criteria stuff?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, just based off what Joe said and what summary of everyone else has said, you know, everybody needs a year to hold harmless at this point because we've already done our planning. That mm-hmm. if our base was what you currently have, COLA rolls with everybody based off that base, and then whatever the difference is, talk about what that allocation looks like. Mm-hmm. So that gives everybody, you know, everybody knows they're walking out of the door with currently what they have to operate. Gives us a year to figure out what that redistribution, if needs to be, or if there's an additional allocation that comes forward. I'm just trying to add something to the criteria, but also, you know, have us know what we're walking away with.
Yeah, and I would just add, and based on what Matthew said, I mean, he makes a really good point in the sense that you know you can't advocate unless you have your ducks in a row.
Right.
And as a consortium, you know, part of it is spending down what we have. And I'm not saying, in no way, let me just be clear, I'm not saying go out and spend it on anything. That's not what I'm saying. We are incredibly thoughtful in LAUSD about how we allocate resources, as I am sure all of you are. But at the same time, if we are going to Sacramento and saying we need more, 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 and they're looking at our balance sheet saying, well, you're not really using everything you have, right? Then I think that's something I'm just saying we should keep and sort of consider.
Well, yeah, right? And so I just want to, I'm going to throw in the criteria. We'll come back. So,
well, I think you have a follow-up to that.
Yeah, it's telling our narrative.
Right.
I mean, we told the narrative today of how that money has impacted our district. I think we can clearly tell a narrative how that impact our consortium and the number of lives and crafting what that narrative looks like. So when the executive team or others go to Sacramento, we're speaking from the same narrative, mm-hmm. that we're citing the same thing. So it's a continual message that's heard in repetition.
Right. So some of the things that just generally that I'm looking at is, and this, again, part of the conference yesterday is that we talked a lot about data. And I don't mean data in terms of funding formula, like for every this, you get this. I mean the data that supports any money we get. Any money we get has to be supported with the data of student outcomes, student growth. It has to be supported with an understanding student support services. Again, the data doesn't mean a one-for-one in terms of dollars. It means that we're saying to the state, these are the outcomes our students are producing as a result of the work that we're doing, right? And also what was clear, and it's funny because this is my shift. Like I was really anti-barriers as anything because I kept saying, well, we're all barriers. But what was crystal clear from this conference was that, again, not necessarily tying a funding formula to the barriers. I think the idea is that it might incentivize them, but we have to show our barriers. We have to get better at identifying all of the barriers because that shows the need, right? So the barriers help legislators see the need of what we're doing, and then the outcomes show, so barriers actually help us in this world of support services. It helps us to be able to defend, right? Whatever data we use, both from outcome data to barrier data, makes what our ask is defendable, defensible. Either both words, right? So it was really clear to me that those things have to be part of our narrative. It's funny, we had some group work, and what you just said, Adrian, and we talked about how critical the data was, but we said, but we also need the compelling stories, the people's faces that speak to that data. We are the biggest consortia in this district, in the state, right? And so we talked about the idea of having kind of ambassadors, people that in different program areas, students that kind of speak, but they're articulate, because I'm going to tell you that having the wrong person speak hurts us as much, mm-hmm. right? So the idea is that we have the data that shows the outcomes and the barriers, the need, outcomes, the money is being used effectively, right? And then the story. So Alice, your stories were moving, right? We need those to also be there with the to match that. So I would, right now, I don't think we're in a position to identify a dollar cost with everything. I think we're still in that, like, it makes everybody nervous when we attach a dollar amount to each thing. But I think that it's critical that we continue this conversation right now about the other thing, and this is, you know, it is hard for Culver City, and I didn't throw this in the considerations, but we have been offsetting our expenditures for our adult ed program with my fee-based program that I had reserves for. But I'm basically out of those. So we've had to offset that. That doesn't go anywhere. Nobody sees that. But when you see my zero balance, you can pretty much guarantee that's a negative balance that's being offset by money that I've had to, that we happen to have a reserve for that we don't have anymore. So when we look at, I think carryover is a consideration, right? It in terms of criteria, and again, we cannot go to the legislature and ask them for money while there's money in the pot. And when you look at it over time, right, we all will have it once, or we all have it when situations happen. And I think the other thing I in the criteria is, when we get to that point, is maybe taking an average, a three-year average of different things that we're looking at, so that nobody is penalized for one bad year or unfairly propelled for one good year. And just later, when we get to actually coming up with formulas, those are just some things I'm thinking that would, I don't know, make fair. Yes, Emilio. I see you over there.
I struggle with some of this, because again, that makes us completely unique from K-12 and higher ed.
What makes us completely unique?
The use of the data in the way that you describe it, with penalties. Isn't that what I just heard?
If
you don't show the numbers, that conceivably in the future the funding would decrease.
In other words, there's a carryover, so they might say, you're not spending your money, why do you want more? I don't know that.
Well, I struggle
with. I heard that. Maybe I heard it.
I'm saying from the state. So here's what we're hearing from the legislative advocates, the lobbyist that is Cayenne, CCA's lobbyist. That it's difficult to go to legislators, as Matthew's saying, and ask for more money when there's a lot of agencies that have not spent money, right? So I don't think we're talking about a decrease in money.
But I struggle with two things.
Okay.
One, I don't think carryover is necessarily
bad.
Okay, but I just
want to. I just want you to hear the considerations. They're not I'm not attached to them or anything.
This is a point. I mean, we're each having this is a hard process, because I struggle if we're going to get to the end of the day and have another workshop, which is difficult for me. But I am playing by the rules, and Bob knows how hard it is. But it is.
It's hard to be good.
Damn, I'm so Irish, which means I'm not good. But anyway, I struggle with having a carryover, because I think that that's okay if your narrative explains your efficiency and effective use of that. Also, I don't think, even if other districts have carryovers, it shouldn't impact the way we do our business, because we can always ask, and we've done this in our district with different programs, not adult education, but they've gotten special carve out in the legislation because of their effective use or innovation. Thinking of Valley College, they got an $800,000 carve out.
Yeah,
and so I mean, I think there's other ways to attract to approach this. It's critical that our narrative align to what, you know, our story.
And I'd like to go back to what Emilio said as well, and I think in this sense, until adult ed effectively tells its story in terms of the impact it has on the well-being of the state of California and the nation as a whole, and until adult ed is seen as a major service provider that that makes a very difference in the quality of everybody's life, it will not get the respect that it needs. So carve-outs or carry-forwards or any of that, that's not the issue. The issue is getting respect. The issue is getting people to understand that adult education is a major educational component and need for the vitality of the state of California. That, in my opinion, is where resources should be going. And I know we can't use LARIC funds for that, but somehow we've got to find a way to the statewide associations to hire those lobbyists, hire those legislators, hire those spin doctors, put that message together, and then march on the Capitol and say, hell no, we deserve respect as well. We deserve funding as well. Right now we are beyond, we're worse than the ugly stepson or stepsister or whatever the hell the expression is. We're just an appendage. And that's our biggest problem.
Amen.
I have some information on the consequences. If you want to, whenever you want to go there.
So let's finish with Montebello and the.
But let's stay here. Let's do that. But let's continue the energy on this topic.
So Montebello hasn't presented their version.
I'm saying that, but then let's hear about the consequences.
After, okay, got it. Okay.
Okay. So basically what I heard yesterday, I remember John Warner, he mentioned we were turning students away, making wait lists, you know, there's no winners and there's definitely no losers. It's a key priority. Ask for more funding. You know, that was like the message that he was stating with Steve Curiel. Then when they mentioned the CCAE and the CAIA are still working on the funding formula, they started this Tuesday talks for 1 hour beginning February of 2018 up until now, and there's no resolve. And then they still have a question of effectiveness. Is effectiveness key? How is it measured? That's, you know, they're in the same boat. So I'm saying when you're asking me on this agenda, you know, funding criteria, perspective, timeline for new formula, how can we do that when even our state, you know, reps are not even there yet? They're working on it. I sure as heck would like to be on that phone call. I don't know if it's Joe Stark. Have you been in those phone calls on Tuesdays when, no? And it's something that I think we need to be aware of in regards to that. And, you know,
this agenda, by the way, was before our Friday presentation.
Okay. and I think we're really hitting on BNC. And in regards to that, the legislator doesn't even have that funding formula at the top of their list. They said it. They straight out said it yesterday, that it's not on the top of their list. That was from John Kepke. So I just have to say in regards to this, you know, the perspective or the, how can we do that before, how can we put the cart before the horse? That's basically it on my end.
Can I add something?
Sure.
So just to piggyback off of what Mr. Kogan said. There was also another presentation about budget priorities with the analysts, the chairpeople of the budget education committees for the Assembly and Senate. And they really hit on the fact, like everyone was saying, data, data, data. And we need to justify the program, but they haven't defined what the effectiveness metrics are. They haven't defined what this immigrant integration metrics are.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of things that are just floating in the ether right now. In fact, so some of the things that they said were, you know, use the current data to create a baseline and then justify more funding. Use the data to create a baseline. Then we can commit to serving more students and to justify increased funding. There was a direct question about per student funding formula, and the straight up answer was, this is not a priority for members of the legislature. It is not a priority. That was the straight up answer. Then the other thing was that one of the members also said, intent is not to tie dollars to outcomes, and I think that was touched upon a little bit here by all the members. And the use of the data should be to determine the need and the impact, as has been echoed by many members of this esteemed panel. So, to me, the message was that data should be used in a positive way, mm-hmm. and not a punitive way. And so I really think that we, moving forward, we really need to look at that, because that was the priorities that are going to be outlined by our state organizations. So I think whatever funding formula and data metrics that we use need to be aligned with our state priorities. Because if we go against our state priorities, then, you know, we're really working at cross purposes here. And we can't get in front of them because they're looking to present their version of the funding formula before the May revised.
Laura and then Amelia.
So I facilitated the panel at CAIA regarding data and ensuring that our data tells the whole story. So, and the point of that panel was to encourage robust data collection, because we know what the legislature wants. It's on our AEP summary report. They're looking for literacy gains, they're looking for transitions, completions, and services provided. It's all there.
Accountability.
Well, that's in T.
Mm-hmm. Right, that's what I'm saying. We know what they want. So I would just like to say, as a consortia, we really shouldn't be afraid of playing by that, because we perform higher than most consortiums statewide. We're very, very good. Our performance is very good. So I don't think we should be afraid of that.
So I agree with Laura, and I think we should spell out so everybody's clear about what that data is, so that in our consortium it is consistent, mm-hmm. that everybody knows this is the data we're looking at. Because when we talk data, that can mean many things. K-12, when you say data, they know exactly what the hell you're talking about. Mm-hmm. Adult ed, it's all over the map. So I agree with Laura. If it's been identified, then let's bring it to this consortium. Let's have a meeting and let's discuss it so everybody knows this is exactly the data criteria we're talking about. The other is that if what we can do is this, because I agree with Joe as well, I'm agreeing with everybody this morning, is that we have, we're ready to rock and roll for 1920. I will have to go out on and find a new job if I go to our superintendent and say, hey, we're going to be bringing in $500,000, $600,000 less. That isn't going to jive, because I'm putting people's lives at risk. Mm-hmm. That workforce. So what I'm saying is, one of the things that when we look at all the different things that have been presented is to look at, I think Joe mentioned this earlier, is a modified or pilot performance matrix that would look at new dollars that come in. I'm all game for that. If new dollars come in, then we can use a performance matrix for how those are distributed. But we do have fixed costs, and we do need to continue operations.
And just
and
just
by the way, that's how K-12 was doing.
Right.
If you're old enough, you remember Governor's Performance Awards.
Right.
Remember those at the high school? If you performed, you were available to get those dollars allocated to you.
Yeah, and just so you know, that the last question about timing had to do with the meetings we'd had and people and an impression I had of, I think we should just, if we're all straight on, we're not even talking about 1920, then that's off the table, out of anybody's space, and that gives us some time to really look at stuff.
And I think that's, Veronica, tied a little bit into the auditor's issue. I'm not sure that it is right that we should be, our tail should be wagged by the auditors, mm-hmm. because that's not happening at the other consortium. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So they seem to be singling us out in implementing something that when our folks did the study, other consortia don't have matrices to distribute money. Mm-hmm. So I think that I personally believe that we don't need to be moved by this auditor's report that something's got to be done here. What we can say is we're addressing these things, we're thoughtfully addressing mm-hmm. these things, and making sure that what we do is in the best interest of each member district.
So one of the things is the remark Ms. Chartier, is that how you had made is very poignant. We are into accountability. Mm-hmm. As you know, Ms. Cicino had stated that we're full fledged ahead. But you need to consider the funding that we gave back in January of 2018. It is 6.1. We went from 100 teachers to 79. The sites went down from 51 sites to 22 right now, and went from 80 classified to 54. And this is in the year of the transition of ASAP, when all that stuff was happening. So I still need you to know that we only have one part-time counselor and two full-time counselors. So what? I don't have a West Wing. I don't know how big LAUSD. It's not their fault that they're the biggest. That's it. That's not their fault to be the elephant in the room.
Well, we're 70% less than we used to be. 70 years ago.
Wow. Really?
Yes.
Okay.
It's in the previous.
That's why you still have hair, Joe.
It's going fast.
So that's what I want to make a point of, because of the fact that. Claire, I really appreciate your comments about the classified. It's like we need that support. It is totally whack. It's getting to the point where you have answering phones and so forth. So we have to put that in the perspective. Mm-hmm. You know, what we tolerate, we perpetuate. Okay? So I just need you to realize that, again, we're moving forward. We're not afraid about the numbers. Accountability is key, but we need all the key players. And I just needed for you to share that.
I want to say one thing. You know, we can either, LARIC has the opportunity to come up with a funding formula that the state could identify as a model, or we can wait for the state to come up with their funding formula, and then we have to implement that. So is it better to get ahead of this, figure out what the best practice is, and then we have determined what the rules of the game are, or let the state dictate what the game is?
We're going to dictate either way, I think.
Adrian, yes?
I think the state's going to dictate in either way.
Yeah.
And we're going to either have to
exactly
change course. I mean, mm-hmm. I don't think we're going to change. I don't think we may set something. I don't think it's going to be married to, because the state's got its checks and balances it has to be held accountable to, and it may not match where we're at. Mm-hmm.
I'm just saying, let's not sell ourselves short. We got some heavy hitters in this room, so I think we have probably a lot of I mean, I'm aware of some things, you know, as a result of, you know, some recent events that have already changed, at least in LAUSD, and some policy issues mm-hmm. that are now at the state level that weren't there mm-hmm. a couple weeks ago. So don't underestimate the power of, you know, some of the you know, allies that we have and constituencies, you know, that we're connected with.
Particularly in the LA. Huge. Mm-hmm.
So Adrian Ann has called for a bio break.
I have.
A bio break. So good. I mean, we're 10:30. I don't think we're going to be really long after that. So I think that'll be good, and then we can kind of just.
Did I?
I love your story. Alex was like yesterday. Both my grandparents took classes at Garfield at home.
Oh really? I took the typing lady when I was in high school.
Oh really?
I wanted to learn how to type faster.
Right.
I was like, oh my God.
Yeah. Both my grandparents were in ESL at Garfield.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Both of you had college at GED, and you don't have a college.
Oh.
What's the COLA? Does anybody know what the COLA is going to be?
3.46.
Okay.
Talk about
What's your charger?
Oh, I have it. It's here. Oh,
yeah. Hello.
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 No, but I
don't know who's writing. I don't know who's writing her work.
No.
I don't know who's her speech writer.
Right?
No, that's true. Yeah. I don't know. You, yes, you know him. Yes, that's possible. No. She's nice. She's nice.
Oh, we need to rebuild it.
Yeah, I think Pero son, you guys are twins. That's why.
Se parecen iguales. Sí, yo la, cuando la vi dije, es igualito. ¿Qué producto se está usando para que se mira más joven?
Is that doing that?
Yeah.
BDK wireless. Like, you want the password? It's BDK wireless.
Okay, so I should have already, once I connected before.
If you said automatically.
BDK wireless. I think I'm on.
I don't want to sit with you guys anymore.
You're too spicy for us, aren't you?
But I'm going to get spicy here.
Don't worry about it.
Than anybody needs in order to move forward for even considering a formula. I'm hearing that, you know, that we don't have a lot of direction exactly from the state. We do have some information in terms of, I think the message really, and by the way, from the CAIA conference and board, of which I've been a member for probably 13 years, and have been working with the conference for a long time. So the message about the data and the data in terms of accountability, in terms of outcomes, in terms of demographics and barriers and all that, I think what the message really is around the data is that it's important to tell our story. That's what it's about, right? Like nobody is just going to give money for the sake of giving money unless they understand. So again, I don't know right now. There's still a lot of nobody's sure about funding per specific data. So I think that's not the conversation. The most important conversation is we do need to capture data. We need to have the data we can report, and we need it to match the faces that represent the students that we serve, because that makes a difference. And you know, anybody who talks to legislators or and unions and
everybody knows that when people talk about needing more money, there's a perception that if it's coming from us, it's because I want to make more money, you want to make more money. When the students talk about it, this is what I need to be served, right? So I think really to keep that in mind, that it is about the students. Any increase or our ask for additional money is about students. It's about serving students and providing them with the services they need. And so as we get into this additional information that anybody needs as part of, so Lancy, do you want to start with the information that you found out?
Sure.
Yeah.
Could I please ask?
Sure.
And I don't want to give Lancy work. I love the guy. He's a good guy.
He loves work.
Can we have an email sent out to us that indicates, as Ms. Chartier said, what is the data that has been agreed on? So that all of us are collecting the same data.
Okay.
So that it can be presented systemically and we can look at it and analyze it. Can we please have an email go out? What exactly is the data that we want to be collecting?
Yeah, and I just, the state has made it clear, and maybe just a reminder, I mean, because it's actually in Adult Ed Program Ed Code, and it says, the measures shall include the following. They can be more, but at minimum, we're looking at improved literacy skills.
Mm-hmm.
We're looking at completion of high school diplomas or equivalents, completion of post-secondary ed certs, degrees, or training programs, placement into jobs, improved wages, transitions to post-secondary. Wow, how do we track that? Well, K-12s are mandated, not optional, mandated to use TE, and we're already tracking it.
Can you do those again real quick?
What's that?
Remit right up this.
Sure. So it's measures shall include the following. Again, there can be other measures, but shall.
Absolutely.
Adults served, right, by the consortium, of course, right? How many adults are we serving, which we're reporting already? Improved literacy skills, reporting already. Completion of high school diplomas or equivalents, we're reporting already. Completion of post-secondary certs, degrees, training programs, reporting already. Placement into jobs, reporting already. Improved wages, transitions to post-secondary, all of which we're already reporting to the state.
And that's the AEBG report that comes from TE that goes to the state. So it takes our data from our student information system, it gets uploaded to TE, and then that's the thing. I will tell you, and I think, Michelle, you mentioned this at one of the workshops you did, or the presentations you did, but we did have a presentation, or one of the panelists was Bronca Marcetta, who's from the Capital Adult Regional Consortia, and they have four team members, and they talked about getting those people together so that we know the data point. The issue is the definition and having everybody get better at documenting them, right? So that's definitely a particular area for LARIC to work on. Mm-hmm. So yes, the data point is there, but are we reporting it the same way? Are we clicking the right box? Those things are something the LARIC office can bring us together to help with. Laura, did you just...
No, I was going to say yes.
That.
Yeah.
Well, and the data accountability committee is working
that's
on that.
A great idea.
Where every district
the
gets brought members.
Yeah.
No, the one at our local level. And LARIC, data and accountability, Elvis and Yanita are the chairs of that.
Right, and so and that's aligned to the AEBG reports, right, Elvis?
Yes.
Right, because that's part of what that is, right? Yes, Matthew?
I have a question and a comment. So, Joe, what you were reading, is that a LARIC proposal?
No, actually, this is state law. Adult education program. Has it's 84849 20. It's in Ed Code, and it's defined the measures for assessing effectiveness of consortium.
So there's actually
this is out of and that's the Ed Code. It came out of which bill?
8104, which is basically governs the adult ed program.
Now, originally there was also in the maybe it was AB86. Individual counseling or career counseling?
So I think, yes. And so I think the strategies that have been put forward by, you know, Adult Ed Office and other is, well, how do you move the needle on these things? Well, counseling is obviously a best practice and strategy that will improve your data, right? Research is there to say, if you have someone, if you have a counselor, you're probably going to make more transitions to post-secondary and meet your outcomes if you have counseling support.
Also, when you look at the report, Matthew, on the report, there's what the outcomes that Joe just talked about, they're in the first part of that report, the counseling students served, and that's the second part of the report. I think we're capturing it. I don't know that they figured out exactly what, you know, but that's where some of the things related to counseling.
It's the third part.
Yeah, so the first is the regular EFL.
Base, literacy, transition, and then support services.
So I have a kind of a broad comment. I think that they, obviously adult ed culture is changing. We're working with community colleges and other things. But I think if you want to change what's happening in Sacramento, we have to change some perceptions. And also, I think CSAE and CAIA have done it one way, and you need to broaden that thought. Now remember, they said way back when, we don't need the block grant because we are already doing everything possible. And so the idea that we're already doing, it sounds like give us more money for doing the same. So be careful with that. Mm-hmm. And when you want to talk to Democratic lawmakers, you want to support the Democratic Party. And you're going to get the support of the Democratic Party if you piss off California Teacher Association. Democratic lawmakers aren't going to go for education policy if it's pissing off the California Teacher Association. I'm just saying, you got labor in the room. You can't have CCAE with a special charm that really needles it. I mean, really points at some very, I don't want to get too into it, I don't want to be negative, but that's a relationship that we should be working together. And there's sometimes pointless ways of antagonism, or pointless the way they don't contact the organizations, they go around the unions, and they really antagonize on issues that we should be working together on. And that needs to be rethought, because that connection for education policy, CTA, I mean, you can do it without CTA, but it's for Democratic support, you're just asking to do it uphill, and there's no reason to.
When you say they are going around, or they, who are you talking about? Just so I'm clear.
CCIE and CAIA, they can do it in a way that has a strategy. Like, for instance, more money for adult ed. Who's not in favor of that? Or I don't want to get into specifics because it's off topic. But there are the way they do it is they almost seem would rather do it without labor. And is there and maybe there's a need to do it without labor. Maybe it's, you know, we're butting heads, of course. But if there's not a reason to go around with labor, they should be a partner. And that should be considered. And I'm saying...
labor should be a partner.
Yeah, and one more quick thing, just to put in your head, yes, you could say we're a bureaucracy that wants more money without giving more data justification for that. Let me put it a whole other way. That today, we fight poverty. Unambiguously. In a state full of immigrants, we are one of the most important institutions to help immigrants, you know, find their American dream. That we help the economy by people who aren't finding the jobs, and we're putting them the jobs that this state, this economy needs. We tick every box of priorities for the Democratic Party. We need to talk about that's what we do, how are you going to help this population?
Just want to add one last stat for your consideration. So, you know, obviously a lot of us have, well, all the districts have been collecting WIOA dollars for many years. So in the last 5 years, LARIC districts collectively have received over $86 million in federal funding based on what? The data that we submitted. So again, I'm really kind of emphasizing that because I've heard some comments like, well, we don't have confidence in the data, or hey, we got to tweak it. You know, reality is we're already certifying, submitting data, and getting money for it. So the idea that we wouldn't have a similar, I'm not saying the way we've presented it, or just, but the concept that there wouldn't be some funding tied to our outcomes, to me, seems
in conflict with what the feds have already sort of directed in terms of performance-based funding.
Anybody have additional questions that they have for everybody or anybody for the LARIC office, additional considerations based on what you've heard, additional thoughts on the criteria? Because sometimes when you hear everybody else and you're like, oh, that's one of my considerations I want people to think about for me too, but I didn't say it right. And so if you thought about it after, like, oh.
I think when we build, if we build performance-based funding, that we have to be careful when looking at federal matrix versus state matrix.
Correct.
Because WIO is a federal program. Adult education is a state program. And I think, and we do receive money for payment for WIOA for our outcomes for the WIOA grant and adult literacy already. That's how our funding is generated. So I think we have to be careful if that becomes a performance measure or a driver in a local distribution. I think if that is where we're going, we have to be very thoughtful of how we approach it, and we have to understand and be able to articulate why we think that is important. I'm very cautious of using a federal program to drive a state program.
Yeah, all I'm saying is these outcomes that I mentioned that are a part of state law for AEP,
right,
we're already measuring those.
Right,
so I'm
right,
saying
but we already got
there's people. No reason why we would recreate a whole different apparatus and mechanism for capturing and reporting these outcomes when what we already have is essentially mandated by the state. So I'm not saying we take cut and paste WIOA because it's a supplemental grant. We're not, you know, supplement, not supplant. But I just think, again, with these measures that we're looking at, we're already collecting and reporting through that federal mechanism machine that many of the K-12s have built up over the years. I'm just suggesting we don't recreate the wheel and we leverage what's already in place.
So I want to throw, something Elvis and I were talking about. And I think I alluded a little bit to it when I said that in with Culver City that we have been operating, if you look at our zero balance of carryover every year, it really should be negative because we've been operating, I've had this reserve of fee-based program money that we've been using to offset the costs. There were some facilities costs at schools that I would normally pay that the district was paying, so there's these shifts, right? And so I'm just would like the group to consider that what does hold harmless mean? Because hold harmless right now for Culver City, this idea of nothing changing would result in us having to cut for next year. So I'm just, because we've been offsetting it with these other things, and that's also with WIOA, with whatever, it's been a, I don't, and then the money that we got from the Montebello redistribution, again, helped again, but I'm very close to, I'm hitting that, we're done now. Like, I don't have anywhere else to pull from to save us, so, yeah.
So let me qualify what I said earlier. When I say hold harmless, I'm saying basically I don't want to be given pink slips out, which I think is what I've heard from a couple of other districts, so. There are timelines and processes that again, you know, it's February, things have to go to board. You know, there's a lot of moving pieces with that. So I guess when I say hold harmless, I'm talking about, you know, if any redistribution would result in pink slips having to go out, I would not be in favor of that.
So at what point do we get to? We've done all these different steps. At what point do we start talking numbers or distribution to move the conversation to the next step?
Well, so does anybody have anything else to say before we jump to exactly what those next steps are? You guys all good? Okay.
I mean, I guess the only thing I would add is, and again, this is not, I'm not saying we take action on this, and I'm just, again, I hope this is a safe space and we feel comfortable just putting ideas on the table. I don't feel good about if there are districts that have reserves and there really is no plan for those reserves. you know, and meanwhile we have other districts that are looking at cutting programs. That's something as a consortium, whether we decide it today, next week, or several years from now, I think that's something we should and have responsibility to address sort of long term. So what are those structural, I'm going to call them kind of inequities maybe with some of the funding that we need to solve locally, I think, before we then do the march up to Sacramento, because if we haven't sorted that out locally, I'm not sure we're going to have a whole lot of success advocating, you know, for more state funding.
I think we have to respectfully disagree. Because reserves, I don't think that district that is identified in that descriptor, and we're still within our planning time to spend the money according to the guidelines. So I think that's an unfair statement, because I'm putting it out there, we're having you know description and response, right? So I don't think that's necessarily a negative, and I think we have to look at that overall, but I think that's an unfair statement.
Yeah. And I would just say that, you know, there's a qualitative difference between, say, someone who's living paycheck to paycheck versus someone, you know, I mean, as far as K-12 is concerned, AEP, that's our paycheck. That's our base paycheck. It's not supplemental. So I think it is qualitatively different as we're comparing, and again, I don't think there's any point in arguing this necessarily at this local level, but the fact remains, I mean, for the community college, it's more supplemental, AEP, than it is for K-12. So at least for LAUSD, AEP is basically our general fund. Now, I appreciate your comment. We could certainly ask the district to allocate more LCFF funds. I don't think we're going to get very far with that. But I do think that's something that will continue to be sort of, again, whether we agree with it or not, whether we like it or not, that is a fundamental difference between, I think, how K-12 and the issues with funding that K-12 is dealing with, that's unique to what the college is dealing with.
You know, as I anticipate, well, if you read the listserv, the adult ed listserv that's out there, that Kelly is in, or whoever it is.
Neil Kelly.
Neil. Mm-hmm. What I read is that other consortia with community colleges in it are having the same kinds of conversations. And what we were trying to point out in our little presentation this morning is that we operate very differently, and we have different constraints, and it takes time for us to get to where we are, and what we try to do is present the progress we've made to date. I think somebody earlier in the conversation also commented about the time it takes to get from point A to point D, based upon the realities that we serve under. And I would say that I think we're making good progress, and I think that the last slide was trying to point out the fact that, you know, we are within the criteria established by the state. We've got spending plans. We don't want to spend money in an ineffective way. We don't want to spend money just for the sake of spending money. And I think we're on a good trajectory. I think it would be very harmful to this consortium, to relationships, to local politics, if somehow coming out of this was because LACCD didn't spend all of its money the way that others think it might have in as quick a fashion, suddenly they were going to be penalized. I think that would be a very difficult message to send. I think that politically could be very divisive. I can think of a number of, I can think of a chancellor, I can think of presidents, I can think of members of the 50 or so elected officials that represent the 900 square miles that is LACCD that would stand up and make a lot of noise over that. I just don't think it's a productive way to go. You know, if 1920 is essentially base plus COLA, and then we figure out what the delta is, legitimate delta is, of what will be the negative impacts of that, then I think as a consortium we talk about that. I think if Montebello started the game on the basis of this size, that's how the formula was determined, and now we find out that Montebello was really this size, and you've done all those cutbacks. Well, what is the actual number that is needed to run your program, as opposed to what you were getting prior to that? Those are basic questions that we can answer. That may then provide some additional funds, but there's no amount of dollars that are going to come up that's going to get LAUSD their 70% back. Not locally. There's absolutely zero chance of that. So the way to respond to that is what we've been talking about all morning, which is to try to get more money. In the meantime, how do we all survive with what we've got as best we can while we go for the bigger issue? And I agree, 1920, the cake is baked on that, unless, and I agree, Joe, you know, March 15th notices are right around the corner, and unless someone's willing to actually politically go to their boards and go to their superintendents, or in our case, chancellor, and say we want to lay off people, which our board would never do that. And it would just cause enormous issues. So we just got to figure this out, folks. But, you know, I would say that LACCD is on a good trajectory, and I wouldn't want to damage that.
So I have additional information questions, I guess. One was, I think, a little bit speaking, is it reasonable, or should we consider, again, in the future, I'm not talking about next year, the idea of all funds that an agency has towards those program areas. So here's what we do know. What we know is that we just all had to submit a report to the state for 17-18, and it listed all of the different funding sources that we have. So where I had my fee-based, I stuck in my fee-based thing. So the state is asking us, how much money are you contributing to programs to the AAP programs, and where is that money coming from? So that's something that's already there, I guess. So we do have that data, at least for 17-18. I think that I believe that we should at some point, and again, this is, you know, if we're talking about a formula or some version of a distribution, like we get COLA, right? COLA is coming. So we know COLA is coming. Last time COLA came, Montebello didn't take their COLA.
No, they did.
Okay, for 18-19, they did.
The 17-18, they did, yes.
18-19.
The jury's
out on that, and we're
going to
meet
to find out what you get.
February 19th at 9:30 in Amy's office.
Right. So I guess one of the things is that when we talk about, like, in terms of the hold harmless, I like the idea of what do we actually need to operate what we're operating, and then at least to start there, and maybe we start there from a staffing point of view, because that's where I don't know. I'm pleading with this board, really. I guess that's kind of where I'm at when I started to look at all the numbers and going, shit. When we get our COLA, they caught it. That's not inflammatory. That's cursing. That when you look at the COLA based on our percentages, ours is like $47,000, right? So that, I guess I'm trying to figure out how we're going to move forward. For right. I get we're not going to change major funding formulas, and I totally understand why we wouldn't do that right now.
Yeah, and I want to be clear, there's no amount of money we're trying to steal from anybody that would even come close to,
right.
You know, so I mean, the structural inequities are really, you know, stem from, I think, obviously the state funding mechanism, sure. And then trying to juxtapose that with other, you know, funding formulas and base allocations and that sort of thing.
You know, there's three types of students we serve, right? There's our traditional students, quote unquote. There's the potential of students. I mean, LACCD serves a community of in the city of LA of 6 million people, plus probably another 6 million in all the other communities. And we haven't even scraped the possibilities of who additional that we could serve. And then there are the ones that Alice talked about, which are the ones that are never really going to be focused on a degree or post-secondary or even a certificate. They just want some basic life skills so that they can survive and do better for the generations to come. That's part of the narrative. That's part of the message. That's part of what we've got to get across above us. Because, you know, we could battle amongst ourselves for the crumbs that are the money that we've got, but that's not going to get us anywhere. So, you know, and the funding system for the community colleges is what the funding system is. And, you know, what we've got to do is put some resources into funding, you know, into getting a better funding system for adult ed programs that are tied to K-12. That's the battle.
I guess, yeah, it is a future battle for sure. And then we have the right now, the reality of right now, because even any legislative motion, any legislative action is going to take time. It really is going to take time. So, you know, I think this conversation has to continue. I don't know that it's going to continue in a formula per se. Mm-hmm. Matthew? And then Lancey, you'll share with us what you got. Yes, sir.
I'm not sure the state's ever going to give you more money if you have a reserve. So you want more money, but you're not spending the money you have. I mean, there might be good reasons for that.
It's not a reserve. It's not a reserve.
Go ahead.
Pardon.
If I could, okay,
please.
So okay. Sorry if I'm, I misunderstand, but.
Unspent funds, how about that?
Unspent, sorry, or you get the idea. I'd like to know, well, now I was going to ask what reserves there are. Now I'm nervous to ask that.
No, it was reported.
But I mean, unspent so or something.
Grace gives us an update every month.
Right.
On the various allocations, and we have 3 or 4 year trend data. It was posted on the website. So it's all up there for folks to see.
And then there's a rationale why it wasn't spent now, what plans there are, what the rationale is to spend it next year. Because you'll be paid again next year. And I don't know if LARIC as a whole, as a region, it wants to think as a region, we do have potential students, and we want to reach those students. Won't we get funded? Will we be funded for those students? So I think it would be helpful if maybe Kat talked about cultural change. Districts and bureaucracies, they want to have the money they have. And I think it is a problem. Each of the components of this consortium, they want to keep their people and have that funding. And I don't think there's enough confidence in funding for LARA it sounds like perhaps. So maybe a funding where people felt confident they weren't really the health of the entire consortium. Well, that is how the state thinks about it, isn't it?
The entire consortium.
So that's kind of, we might be at odds. And I apologize if I'm misrepresenting because I don't come to all the meetings. But I would like to know what the plans are for unspent money. I think that is an important question.
Well, yeah, and I think the kind of how we've been operating so far is kind of basically in good faith, right? We have assumed and we're assuming that everything folks are doing with their money is, you know, aligned with our 3-year plan and meeting those objectives. And until we, I guess, come up with a different framework or mechanism in terms of accountability, whether that's a third party or whatever else has been discussed, you know, we kind of have to take each other at our word, I guess. This is kind of how we've been doing it, right?
Well, and we said in the beginning, and I think somebody said it at the conference, you talked about the point for people coming up with a philosophy. And one of the philosophies is to think as a consortium. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so my request is that we think as a consortium. Okay, Alancy.
Okay, so the letter that I recently sent was from the State Auditor's Office, and that was just a reminder that a report will be issued to the legislature so that they can take that into consideration in the new budgeting season. I want to read the last paragraph from that letter, and I think that that addresses it as directly as probably they would want to put it. It says, our audit and investigative efforts bring the greatest returns when the entity acts upon our findings and recommendations. This report is one vehicle to ensure that the state's policymakers and managers are aware of the status of correction action agencies and departments report they have taken. Further, we believe that the state's budget process is a good opportunity for the legislature to explore these issues and, to the extent necessary, reinforce the need for corrective action.
So, in terms of, does it tell us anything about consequences?
No.
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 I think we've met what they requested.
Well, I think that if when you look at their, when you look at the whole report, right, that came out, and what they did is they basically said, okay, this is what LACO has to do. They found, they had their findings, and then they had the section that this is LACO, this is what you got to do. Montebello, this is what you got to do. LARIC, this is what you got to do. And then each of those agencies responded in kind as to what they did. That's the way the report was laid out, right? And so LACO said, well, we told them this, this, and this on these dates and blah, 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 blah. Montebello said, we put these particular things into place, blah, 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 blah. And then LARIC said, we think it's kind of unfair to ask us to do this that the state hasn't figured out what to do, mm-hmm. I think. So that was kind of what we said, right? I think that the reality is that we're having conversations about effectiveness for the whole. I think if we have those conversations around data and effectiveness for the whole consortia, then we get to this place where we're not measuring Montebello's effectiveness. We're kind of saying, what are our bars on effectiveness altogether? I think that so we don't know what they're going to say as a result of the last 12 month one we just said, these are the things we put in place. They could come back from that and say, hey, so far you just keep telling us it's not your job. Their response to our, it's not our job, it's the state's job, and the state hasn't given us direction, was it's clearly delineated, and they pulled language out of the law that says that consortia is supposed to, you know, oversee. And so that's where we had a disagreement with that, with what the state said, the state auditors. They interpreted the AEBG code as, this is what we
think. So the example, the very, very recent example that comes to mind is Pasadena Unified. Mm-hmm. And LACO coming in and essentially telling them that you had to find $12 million out of your budget or we're going to come in and take over. So the Board of Trustees and the Superintendent, Brian McDonald, and staff had a very, very difficult 6-8 month period trying to figure out where they're going to do it. But because they had the power of the LA County Office of Education on top of them, they had their time, and they did carve out their $12 million, and they are now where they need to be, according to LACO. At least to my knowledge, there is no state agency that has come to LARIC and said to us, unless you provide a plan that says you're going to cut X dollars or you're going to take X absolute specific steps, there will be the consequence of X.
That's correct.
Right? What we have is an audit report from a state agency that may or may not be speaking for the California Department of Education, which is the entity that provides this money. Montebello is already dealing with the LA County Office of Education, right?
Yeah, we have
the whole district.
Bias here.
Yeah. So,
everybody there.
So, you know, so any action that we take would be our action. Now, who are we? We are a confederation. We're not a JPA. We're not a consortium. We are a group of entities that cooperatively work together.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no legal thing that ties us together. In fact, if there was, I'd had concerns as a chief business officer for the district saying, I don't want to take on any part of Montebello's problems. I got enough of my own problems.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So the state has created
a thing that they don't even know what they created. Mm-hmm. So, you know, for us to react in some manner without really knowing what we're reacting to, or without having some true obligation that we knew that there would be significant consequences if we don't, becomes a problem to us on the local level. LAUSD is LAUSD, LACCD is LACCD. We are different. But Burbank and Culver City and Montebello are much more similar in terms of size, scope, what they do. As a consortium, maybe we need to think about that and try to, you know, allocate resources accordingly, even if we have an authority to do that. Okay, to me, Montebello is dealing with LA County Office of Education and the state through whatever their problems are. We are somehow part of that. If they got money on the basis of this, and their program was purportedly that size, and now they're this, well, that seems to be the delta that we should be talking about ongoing. That's a simple thing that if we have obligation, we should talk about that. And over a period of, you know, 2 or 3 years, let them step down to where they need to be, and we're done with it. That's as far as we should go with it, in my opinion.
But the exception is, Dr. Miller is, Bob, yeah, is that we did give back $6.1 million.
Right, but we would continue theoretically in that place unless you can prove that you're in a different place.
Okay, so that $6.1 million was distributed amongst all the partners, correct?
Mm-hmm. One time.
So if we're a consortium, then shouldn't that money have been given back to the state? Because it was...
Well, I don't know the answer to that question, okay, but I would speculate that money went to the consortium as an allocation of the consortium,
yes,
and all we're trying to do is allocate it accordingly based upon whatever that initial formula was. Mm-hmm. So if the $6.1 million came back to the group and it was allocated, well then at least until we can see Montebello's growth, that money should continue to be distributed to the rest of the consortium, as opposed to going back to the state, which won't do anybody any good other than the rest of the state.
Well, we actually consulted with the state office at the time, and they instructed us to redistribute the funding,
right,
among the consortium members and not return it to the state.
Well, because it was based on a set of variables.
Exactly.
So that within our geographic.
For the region, right?
So I have a suggestion. I think I'd like to suggest that we move on in terms of we will await the state's findings, recommendations, report of it, and then we will convene after that and decide what we need to do about it.
Right.
Otherwise, I think a lot of speculation and conjecture about what the state may or may not do is probably not maybe the most effective use of our time. So maybe if we could get into next steps,
yeah,
where do we want to go kind of from here?
Well, that's really a question for everybody. I see two paths, right? Two possible paths. You guys tell me what other paths you see. One possible path is that because we're talking about the future, that we have some conversations and we actually get to a place where we agree on what that formula might look like with all the different, or what the distribution might look like, and however that's based. The other path is that everybody has everybody's considerations now, everybody has everybody's point of view now, everybody has all of that stuff, and people present formulas and we go from there. I think that from a collaborative point of view, it's much better for us to get to a place where, especially because we have more time, get to a place where we are a little, that we're aligned with the direction in terms of funding distribution. So thoughts on those two things. I mean, I don't know. Anybody thinking?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be hard to continue this in a productive way,
mm-hmm,
if we have five members with completely different perspectives on what effectiveness means, mm-hmm, right? So I guess my recommendation is we stick with as much as possible what's already been sort of in place and what's, at least from a baseline perspective, you know, what the measures that the state is looking at. We can add more by all means, 1,000 metrics, go for it, but
I think, you know, in the same way with the immigrant integration legislation that passed, there were certain districts, very small number of districts, that wanted to add all these additional metrics over and above what we already have with Yale Civics. Why wouldn't we just start with what we have? Again, it's not perfect. We're not saying it's the end-all, be-all. But if we're looking at maybe a multi-year, you know, process, my concern is we're not going to be any further along. I don't want to be at the same place 3 years from now, still debating and discussing and, you know, what are we going to do? When we already have, I think, some pretty clear guidance and practice in place. So I guess I'm just saying, let's leverage, let's build on what's already in place, enhance, augment. Not saying we're not going to be innovative or any of that stuff, but I'm concerned that if we are trying to reinvent the wheel, we're going down another track that just may not necessarily be very productive.
You know, I don't necessarily, as a representative of my district, as Joe taxpayer, have a problem with us being funded on the basis of what we deliver. I am a little concerned that the performance space or success space, it can go too far because it leaves out a significant amount of the population that we serve. So, you know, if you look at the state student-centered funding formula, it recognizes equity as a big piece, access equity in terms of underrepresented, lower-income, first-generation, AB 540, and then performance as just a piece of that. That's getting the camel's nose under the tent, so to speak. So I'm not personally against funding ourselves on the basis of a formula that complies with the AEP state standards, okay? Because that's the measure that they use, and that's fair and appropriate. So I can see us going down that path. I can see going back to the chancellor and the president and saying, hey guys, men and women, hey folks, recognize that we have got to be held accountable to the same standards that everybody else is. So for our piece of it, this formula says we've got to provide certain results on the basis of the performance measures that the state sets forward.
And they're pulling us from MIS now, not TE.
Right.
Because all the community colleges push
right,
back.
Right. And there's a different database that we just have to look at. And, you know, when I think of the size of the San Diego program, the North Orange County program, the Santa Ana program, these are huge voices that will be heard beyond LARIC. And so everybody's ship has got to get to harbor safely, and we've all got we all that kind of stuff. So I'm okay with having that kind of conversation about tied to some kind of reasonable performance base, as long as we don't leave out the other, and that's Bent Montebello, but the kinds of people that Alice were talking about. There are other reasons why adult education exists, and it's not as measurable, and therefore we've got to, you know, access in and of itself is a big reason, is a big funding requirement.
So how do you feel about, like, at our regular open public meeting? I'm sorry, Matthew, did you raise your hand?
Yeah, I'm sorry. You know what? It's like two sides of the table. I mean, I think there is a sense, a culture, again, of kind of we already do it well. I think if we want this consortium to work, K-12 has to listen to what community colleges are doing well. And I think if they have, consider some of those other criteria that they say they need. And let's put it all in there and see it is. Let's not necessarily, I mean, you don't want to overreach. I hear what Joe's saying, we're already doing things well, but all right, let's do what we're already doing. Let's throw in a few more that'll help community college, because I think if we reach across the table with community college, it'll help in the long run. I think everyone's very nice, but I'm not sure the trust is there as much as we would like. And I think some of these criteria seems to be a good starting point. And community college, I'm surprised you wouldn't throw in something the community colleges do, sorry, but better than that we're learning from is counseling. And I don't know why. Also, community college, you guys are doing it, you have the individual plan, you're mandated to do it. You should be paid for that. And we should be paid for it.
We're already paid for it.
Yeah.
that's why we're not asking to be paid for it. We're already paid from the state for that, so that's why we don't bring it forward, because we've already received payment for it and how we operate as a district.
And I don't know when we want to do this, but I've got 6 or 7 or 8 kind of big takeaways from today that I'd like to at least read to the group.
Yeah,
I'd be more than happy to provide
to
Lanzi. Whenever the time is, but we actually got a lot accomplished today. And I hope no one leaves the table today thinking that it wasn't a very productive conversation. Mm-hmm. And these themes are not all my own, but they're themes that I heard today. And I think it would be good and healthy for us to pursue some of these whenever you want to hear them.
Okay, can I ask a question about, and I don't know, maybe this speaks to, so one is, there was a lot of conversation around legislation and advocacy. Mm-hmm. So the question is, do we want to create a workshop around legislation and advocacy that one of the rest of you can run, facilitate? Is that something we want to do next? Or do you want to talk about that, put that on the agenda as some dates for Friday's meeting?
Well, I guess it really depends on how serious are we about it. Because if it's something we're really serious about, I know that like our LAUSD government relations staff, they're going to be ramping up really soon, to start heading up to Sacramento and advocating. Whereas if we wait too long, if we really want adult ed to be part of whatever those talking points are, and we're gonna move forward regardless of the consortium, obviously. But I think it's better if we all move in unison. But there's kind of some timelines with that probably need to happen sooner rather than later. If in fact this is something we're really serious and want to commit to.
Yeah, it from an LACCD's perspective, we have two major adult ed focuses legislatively. One is the non-credit faculty as part of our faculty obligation number, and the other is the fully fund non-credit on the basis of how credit is funded in the new funding formula. So, for example, we have the CDCP, the Career Development Career Program, or whatever it is, that's fully funded at 100% of the access piece, but it's not included in the 20% for equity, the 20% for success. And the question is why? So that's something that LACCD is going after to get it under the tent, as is San Diego and other districts that are impacted by that. But I'd kind of like to, and maybe I'll just take personal privilege if I may.
Yeah, then I think it makes sense.
So
your theme.
We started by saying legislative advocacy should be the biggest consideration. We should leverage our size and our influence. Then we talked a little bit about, maybe I just did, work with local boards and districts need to advocate for a share of local funds. Then we started talking about the need to focus on social justice and economic development themes in terms of the messaging. I'll send these around to Lanzi. Then we need to create our message. Adult ed drives the quality of life, drives the economy, drives social justice, drives a better California, drives a better America. State advocacy groups need to drive that message. In other words, you've got adult ed has these two, and they're the the strength. We community colleges, we work through the Community College League of California, and we have an organized way systemically to hit those legislators. We must make adult ed a priority of the state legislature and the governor. We need to build a narrative that does this. We need to partner with labor groups, need to work together, need to work with CTA. Advocacy groups would rather do it without labor. I'm not sure if that's true or not, but if that's the case, it shouldn't be the case.
Yes.
It should not be the case. Because you're right. The Democrat, my last point, today we fight poverty. Unambiguously, we own that. We help immigrants find their American dream. And then we tick every Democratic Party box and priority. We just need to work with the state advocates, the agencies that you all pay dues to, that maybe we pay dues to just nail this and deal with it at the state level. Mm-hmm. We can have a workshop about about what we would do locally, Joe's right, it's too late. That cake is baked. We've already taken to our board, our state and our federal priorities for this legislative session. It sounds like the conference you guys came back to recognized a lot of these things. Mm-hmm. So what do we do to support those things from happening? And by the way, I do not believe we can spend $1 of LARIC dollars on lobbyists. Can
That's
we?
Correct.
No, we can't spend a nickel of it. So we got to approach this through the state right. agencies yeah. who can spend money on that, mm-hmm. but we can't.
Right.
But what do we need? So we need, our voice needs to be heard at those agencies. We need to go to those agencies and pound on the table and say, this is what we need you to do for us. Because I think we all agree that what I read here is what we need to do. And we can have another Saturday workshop and talk about it, but we don't really have the ability to do it. LAUSD has got a large lobbying entity. We don't have anything. Well, we actually have a pretty big one, frankly. But at the same time, though, the priorities are set.
I know that the advocacy kept coming up, so my question is, what is next as it relates to advocacy?
By the way, Adriana just made a really good point. It was an important point. It took us, she and I, a couple of others, years to get adult ed even on the advocacy list for the district. Okay? So we've made a lot of progress in that regard, but it's going to take more going forward. I'll shut up now, I promise.
But I guess, like, fundamentally, though, do we want to set one or two things? So if funding, if that's going to be our thing, regardless of which groups we're working with, more funding for adult ed, why? Right? And so are we going to come up with a
narrative,
our own talking points, our LARIC perspective, spin, whatever, on mm-hmm. why we need more funding?
And we could probably spend marketing dollars on that, right?
Yes.
Right.
So we could find an agency out there to develop the narrative as to why what LARIC right. does counts, and we can pay for that with our dollars.
Yes.
As a means of outreach and you know, developing support right. for what we do, that mm-hmm. we can spend money on.
So 100% of CAIA and CCAE they share a lobbyist right now, and one message. That was one of the things she kept saying over and over. Like, we can't convolute the message with anything other than funding. Mm-hmm. So right now that's it in this cycle, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So
funding based on what, though?
Well, yeah. that's
just it. I mean, what is
they're saying? But just in all fairness to them, is they're saying even McCarty, Assemblymember McCarty, who's the chair of the Assembly Budget Committee on Education, that spoke. Is saying, help me help you. They're open to a funding conversation, but if we on the field cannot give them the data, and our lobbyist, by the way, doesn't give them our data, we have to give them our information, right?
But we can advocate individually all day long. Mm-hmm. Money doesn't come to LA, USD. It doesn't mm-hmm. come to LA. It comes to LARIC, and then
right.
we, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's where we're going to have to determine whatever these materials are, if we want to go there, like, what does that look like in terms
yeah.
of LARIC, right? And we're going to have those data points so mm-hmm. that when we go to Senator, Assemblyperson, so-and-so, you know, from a LARIC perspective, here is a profile of how we're helping your
right.
constituents.
Right.
Here are 3,000 more folks that now have citizenship mm-hmm. that didn't have it last year.
Right.
Here are 5,000 more people that have a high school diploma that didn't have it last year.
And maybe visiting from yeah. one of those students that is sharing that information. So,
right. So again, you know, looking at our LARIC data, uh-huh. right? And again, it just seems like there's some mixed messages and feelings about that. But I think we need to have LARIC data that we all have in our hands around these particular points. Mm-hmm. It's only going to come from one place.
Mm-hmm. So
right now. Right now.
It's going to come from more than one place.
Okay, well, from us, it's going to come from one place.
Yeah, it's going to come from more than one place.
Right.
So is that something that we have LARIC staff work on? Is that something we need to work? I guess that's my question is then, where do we go next for this thing called mm-hmm. the advocacy component for the LARIC piece? Where do we go next? Is that a workshop? Or is it them coming up with some stuff that...
Matthew's being asked to be recognized.
Huh?
Matthew's asking.
Oh, I'm sorry, Matthew.
just checking. So you're going to double down on the plan this year that didn't get more money. Don Kepke says, let me do the same thing next year, but you want more money for the same program. You need to be more sophisticated about this.
Matthew, the data is not getting to the legislators, Matthew. What I'm saying is, I want to be clear what I'm saying. We're not getting the data to the... I mean, so, yes, we can collect and tell all kinds of stories, but we're not even reporting what we have to the legislators. They don't know. They don't know our impact in their constituencies. And I'm saying we have data points that we can share tomorrow.
As a layer.
But again, if we don't all agree to share and we're just like taking all kinds of different data and, you know, and we're not unified in the type of data points that we're sharing, I just don't think it's going to resonate. I guess that's my point. So I'm not saying status quo, business as usual. I'm saying impact to your constituencies in your district. Here's what adult ed delivers.
I guess I'm commenting, Don Kennedy says, only talk about money. I'd like to know what Mr. McCarthy's goals are. You might want to base them on
what but that did come up, and so you were not the meeting. But that his priorities are early childhood ed, Medi-Cal expansion. I will get actually the when he spoke about the different priorities, one of the conversations that came up on Friday was how do we tie what we're doing to the other state priorities? And one thing that I brought up when we met is as a LARIC, how can we, as all of our agencies that have early childhood ed in our existing district, make a tie so that early childhood ed is the one saying to the state, we can't do what we do without adult ed for our parents, right? As opposed to just us saying, right? So it builds the partners that are saying we need this to continue.
And just a little nuance here, we have in LARIC representing the chair of the Assembly Education Committee, Patrick O'Donnell. Now, he is a huge proponent of CTE. It wouldn't kill us to have as an advocacy point what we're doing or what we plan with CTE. So I guess my point is that I've seen the lobbying of CCAE and Ms. Kepke, and I think you need to be a little more sophisticated about it than just keep asking for funding. She's done that, and she says, well, the ball's in your court. I think there's a lot of different things you can do, and I think we should be open to talking about them, and even a more common front between LACCD and the K-12s would be useful too.
Veronica, did you want to expand for the benefit of people that did not attend that conference what the guiding principles of the CCAE and CAIA ask was?
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's
what I can send it to you guys. I think what I will do is I'll send that so that way I can give it to everybody as opposed to just articulating.
As a matter of protocol, I just want to point out that we're coming up on time, and it would be nice to have next steps of this meeting so that we can proceed with whatever needs to be done.
So can I just read off the guiding principles of what the gentleman and
the funding formula concept.
Just the principles that they based their concept on. Equitable funding across the two systems, K-12 and community college. No one gets hurt. Don't lose consortium momentum, and introduce accountability measures that are reasonable and defendable. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of like what, and then they can talk about the specific how they tied in the justification for getting more money, because I think that's an excellent point. And there was actually a concept for that.
So Lindsay, to your point in this discussion, my notes, advocacy discussion. What do we need to do? We need to provide LARIC and other data to support our ask. Two, we need to invest in messaging and narrative development. Three, legislators are not getting the data. We need to figure out what that means. Four, how do we tie early childhood education to adult education? Five, how do we tie adult education to Newsom's and other key elected goals? Mm-hmm. And six, we need to strategize with CCAE and CAIA, whatever they are, and develop joint
advocacy messages.
I guess the question is the how.
You'll be kind enough to send that.
Yeah, I'm going to send you all this stuff if you like it or not.
Thank you so much. And
so next steps.
Next steps.
So what next steps around funding.
What is our total allocation for next year?
Off the top of my head is $131 million, I believe.
526 is it?
Yeah. And that includes 3.46?
Yes.
Is it
931-526-970?
992. Yes. Elvis is going to speak finally.
Mind you that the official calculation has not come out yet. As soon as it's available, then we'll make it available, because obviously the state has more you know, numbers to include with the Mantisa.
So everyone, so I just wanted to say something. So I've been sitting here listening, buying some stuff, which is normally what I do at meetings. But so there's a lot of conversation around data, and did everyone read the report that Veronica, the Lansing sent per Veronica? Or Joe's? So there was a couple of interesting things that I wanted to point out that I saw. So on page 4, if you're looking at it, it says something about mixed methods to collect and assess performance progress and outcomes. There's a little small, a couple sentences there. It says metrics should measure both progress and completion, as focusing solely on completion of performance goals can create unfair and inflexible targets for units with varying capabilities or that serve larger populations. So that's just something to consider in terms for the smaller districts. If you scroll down to the, I think, page 9, it goes over a couple of other things, a couple of other performance metrics such as course completions, progression. So I like some of the ones that I saw here. I liked efficiency because it shows how quickly a student goes through a program. So for a small school, that's really important. They identify workforce as well. So my only concern is if we look at the AABG summary, and it's perfectly fine if we use that for performance, it's just keep in mind that it's in an outcome-based summary.
It's in progress.
Yeah, rather the in progress part. So it does distinguish between an EFL, which is for ABE, for EFL, and then a literacy game for CTE. But just a couple of things to consider as we, because I hear a lot of data conversations, so just those items to consider. But I do like the in progress sort of being able to track that. So
finding a way to track something that speaks to. So one of the issues with ADA that came up is it's 525 hours, like the old system was 525. So what happens when you have a student that goes to 475? It's not like you didn't create all the transition people and all the people that did. So how do we consider that there are costs involved even when somebody doesn't completely, right? Mm-hmm. But we can't have a system that just pays on
completion.
One or the other, because that would be inequitable, you know, it wouldn't be equitable.
An EFL is an incremental learning game. It isn't a completion.
But so the way it's reported in the report is via completion. So you have the lowest score and the highest score. It doesn't track anything in between, either before or after.
Yeah. It's measuring an incremental learning game. It doesn't matter the completion of a course. It's measuring the national reporting system completion, but not our own internal completion.
Mm-hmm. I don't think we're ready to have that conversation. I know for me, for my perspective on it, and I'm moving my district to all e-testing as much as I can, except for off-sites where it becomes a barrier because of access to technology, that until we can, and we're not going to resolve that conversation today, because that is a fundamental difference between all of us, that what level of technology that we're using, and the technology creates a baseline that is not necessarily created with paper, pencil, testing. But until we can have, I don't think we're ready to have that conversation today. I think what we need to get to the point is we have $131 million. We have what we were budgeted last year. We know we have a 0.346 COLA, and there's a difference of about $13 million. Is that $13 million difference enough to sustain people so the next year we can resolve in building the matrix as well as the funding that goes matches that matrix, and then test it? Because that's one thing that said in the Hanover report, and I know in our own district, we have rolled it out and tested it. Because colleges understand, and we had colleges that didn't do well in innovation but well in success, it hurt their overall funding. They know now what they have to build. And we gave them that year to say, okay, this is, if I based it completely off this, you're, this is where you would be. But now you have this 12-month window to figure out how you're going to address that gap.
So I just want to reiterate just part of it.
Yeah.
If I heard what you said correctly, we have 13 point something million to the good. In other words, if every district got the same amount of money plus 3.46%, does that include the Larrick Administrative Office?
It will, yeah.
Then there's $13 million left that we could talk about how to allocate to pick up some of the slack as other things are happening.
So it's four million.
No, that includes 5% that we were talking about on a different tangent.
No, it doesn't.
The amount of COLA is equal to about $4 million.
Yeah, where is the $13 million?
4.3.
That's new money.
I did a hard roll, and it could be wrong, but we did a hard roll of what everybody's got budgeted this year, plus, and that includes the Larrick office, LACCD. That's about $114 million.
So what we have right now included Montebello distribution, so it might have thrown off numbers.
Well, no, I've used Montebello's number as it was. And there is about $4 million for COLA. You're absolutely right, Lancey. But if we're going to get $131 million, what we currently already are committed to with the COLA is about $118 million. There's still a difference there.
I'm not sure what you mean by what we are committed to.
Well, so I'm saying committed to in the sense if we fund everybody at the same rate.
If we find everybody at the same rate, the amount would be our current allocation, which is equal to $121,874.
Is that including the 3.46?
I'm sorry, is it 127.
Everybody's getting the same in 19, as of now, this
right.
moment.
Well, that,
everybody's getting the same amount they got this year plus the 3.46%.
So what's
correct?
The difference so we can figure out how to allocate that?
COLA is
4.39. No, we're saying if everybody gets the same amount plus COLA.
Yeah, so everybody gets the same amount plus COLA.
Nothing left.
That would be equal to $131,526,992, and I can read you what each energy district should get.
Okay.
So Burbank,
I lied about
$2,674,734. Yes, Burbank, $2,674,734. Culver City, $1,627,060. LACCD, $7,994,486. LAUSD, $105,834,478. And Montebello Unified School District, $13,396,234.
And that
so that's just an equal straight across the board.
And what does the Larrick office get?
That is included at this point with LAUSD, since LAUSD is...
And that's the total allocation?
That is the total allocation of 121, yes.
121?
So you should probably,
when you take
Larrick office out, so we know LA, like, if they shouldn't be...
It should be set aside.
So let's set it aside, just in looking.
So what did you say, Grace? I'm sorry.
Larrick gets $865,113 plus the COLA.
Right. I'm sorry, could you say that again?
$865,113 plus COLA.
So their COLA is about $29,930.
I'm sorry, that was a question. Why do they get COLA?
Yeah, what is the opposite?
Because it's staffing. It's basically staffing, so we need to
provide for the COLA has to go across anything that LARIC's funding, is my understanding, unless we want to change that.
No, but so
I would assume our LARIC staff wants to
teachers, so
get paid.
All right, stand corrected.
Half
thank you.
My whole.
That's true.
Mm-hmm. Sorry. So, next steps, how do people feel about talking about a particular criteria at each meeting that we have coming forward, or do you not? Just to kind of talk through, I mean, because we need to move forward on something eventually, and I agree, if we stop, we can't not have any conversations about funding, right, going forward.
Well, again, I'd like to, you know, I'd like to know what the Montebello situation is. I'd like to know clearly what it is that the state is going to say to us based upon the report that's going to come out.
On the 12th.
On the 12th or whenever it comes out. And I'd like to know exactly what Montebello, the size of Montebello is now, and what, you know, because again, your funding was based upon what it was, okay? What was purported to be by former colleagues or whatever. It is now, it was X, it's now Y. You apply the formula that we had before to Y, where would they end up? Then you look at that excess money and you then determine what you can or cannot do with it. That's a way to deal with it for 1920.
For 2021.
It's this notion of hold harmless, right? So whether, you know, 1920, okay, we were set, but at least whatever. I don't know yet, okay? I really don't know. I just need to know what the size of the delta is, all right? If it's $6 million, and if we agree to that, you know, you already agreed to operate with less money in 18-19, theoretically the same premise would go forward, unless there's a mitigating factor that would have us reconsider that.
Other than LACO wanting to come and check everybody.
Yeah.
That's exactly what they told me to represent. They said, then we're going to go in and we're going to check everybody's numbers, facts, everything, which we want to do. We want to be...
Well, but ours are already in ASAP. Ours were never questioned in terms of where the data was coming from.
That's their recommendation, that mm-hmm. they'll come in before mm-hmm. anything happens, mm-hmm. and they'll go through every single district accordingly. It can't just be Montebello only. How many times do we have to get hit? How many times do you have to keep on repeating the same thing?
No, you say every district. What do you mean?
Every district plus the community colleges.
Every district. You mean the consortia or just
consortium? So that's what they want to do if that's the case. But we're trying to be professional. We're working with you. We want to be a team. I've been in a team, in many teams, mm-hmm. and it's always been a contentious thing. But when you're talking, and you had mentioned it, Emilio, that, and you did too, that you have to give pink slips. We have to think smart, not, you know, just got to think in that focus. And so, you know, when we go in, we have to answer to two boards. You realize that, right? So then it's going back to them, and then they're saying, you know, this or that. But bottom line, what we're trying to do is tell them we like the LARIC. We like what it stands for. We believe in the mission statement. We're working together on the philosophy of funding. We're doing that. But we keep on hitting our heads saying, okay, well, Montebello, where the big monies are where they're at, even though they said they're 70% less. Correct, Joe? You're 70% less? LACCD, what they indicated in the meetings the last 2 days is that we're at a different level than the community colleges. They're getting double of what per student funding if we want to do that. But why are we attacking each other? Why are we consistently, what is it that you as a consortium, as a team, just put it down on the line, put it on the table. This is a waste of time. You know, I'm glad that we met on Saturday, but let's get something done. What is it that you want? You know, really. And then I'll take it to the district, and I'll present it to LACO. And then I have to listen to them.
Okay. So a couple of quick things. One, I'd welcome LACO to come in and look at everything if they wanted to. They don't really have any authority. But secondly, they don't have any authority over the LA Community College District. Our authority
is through the California Community College Chancellor's Office. Mm-hmm. That's the authority that, and we are an independent special district, so that's neither here nor there. The second thing is, as far as the funding is concerned, if you've agreed to operate with $6 million less on the basis of what occurred last year, what is wrong with us continuing with that model? Maybe not in 1920, but at least 2021 give you a transition year to get used to it or something. You know, why don't we just...
Why just us? I don't understand. I'm sorry. If we're consortium, we're supposed to build each other.
Because Montebello was caught doing things it shouldn't do. LACCD was not, LA Unified was not, Culver City was not, and Burbank was not.
Because they didn't have the same situation. Montebello Unified was deemed investigated for other items.
That's
and
right.
They threw in adult ed. It's also a political thing when that superintendent
yeah.
was working and they did not want to work with adult ed. You know that. Yeah. You know that same climate. So I'm just saying...
Well, what I'm saying is that there are significant changes in the adult ed program at Montebello, and people left the district because of it.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, there was a sense that something wasn't happening correctly in Montebello. That's why Montebello is under investigation. Burbank, Culver City, L.A., LAC, we didn't get under investigation. So it would be inappropriate for us to be dragged into what occurred in Montebello. Unless LACO or some agency came to us and said, we're going to investigate you because you did something that was potentially fraudulent. So I don't know that, I don't think we can share in that regard.
I think when you talk about LACO coming and not having power over you, that's not what they're saying. They're just saying that, like, okay, so you're doing the same, you're doing the same, you're doing the same, we're all going to be in the same boat. That's what they're saying. That they want to come and say, like, okay, well, Montebello has this, they have X, Y, and Z, you know, Culver City has X, Y, and Z, and they're all being accountable for the
correct way. I think we have to have a LACO representative come to this body and tell us that.
Well, and I think the other thing, I just to kind of take us back a second, I think one of the most, maybe we start, and I think Joe mentioned this at one point, but what if we start from... What is your budget? What is your expected budget, right? Because there's the what you've already contributed. What is your need for this 1920 school year? What is everybody's need for 1920 school year? Does that even make sense as a place to start?
Well, I mean, have you issued? I'm assuming you've already given your staff assignments for 1920,
right?
So what is it?
You have to also consider that we've cut how many classes in our whole entire program due to the reduction of the funding, and of course services.
Right. So I'm just saying it's too late.
And that's too late
for a reduction in force.
Right. No. Right. So I don't think that that's what Bob's talking about. The reduction in force. I think what he's referring to is they're already operating on less. Their current budget is, or anybody,
at
your
least
current
$6 million less,
yeah.
right?
Because we
put,
and
so
we
and your
cut,
budget is
and we
in
cut,
that regard.
So if they're operating on less, if anybody is operating on less than what they're budgeted, then that means that there's some money there, and that could be, and that's everybody. It could be the community college, Burbank, Culver City, LAUSD. The mm-hmm. reality is that there is what you're budgeted for. Right, what your expected expenditures are and what your budget is, and I think that that's where this conversation of anything exists, and it's, you know, yeah. I don't like being this board president. Who's going to be it?
You're doing a great job, though. By the way.
So here's the question moving forward: What do we need? Friday. What are we going to have on this agenda on Friday? Is there going to be anything related to funding, a particular area of funding? What are we going to do next as it relates to advocacy, right? Because there's the conversation about all the things we should do and things that should happen, but unless we've actually planned them, they stay in that world of should.
And let me...
I'd like to make a recommendation for one of the, if maybe one of a few priorities would be around career tech ed, because one of the, you know, because I think there are those, but maybe, and we haven't necessarily maybe always brought those to the table, but there are some of us, I think, that have operated with sort of some offsets, right? So I know in LAUSD, many years ago, there was a decision made to, you know, increase fees for career tech ed students. I think those we need to work towards making those fees go away. But the reality is, whether we like it or not, we are relying on those as part of our budget, you know, in to support CTE. So that's, I don't have the budget number off the top of my hand, but I want to say it's somewhere in the $2.5 million range. And so that would be an ask. I'd love to go to Sacramento right now and say, hey, you're investing in strong workforce, right? Assemblyperson O'Donnell, whoever it is we're talking to, you know, oftentimes the adult ed system isn't necessarily funded in those types of projects. So how do we fit in? And if it's creating, you know, and here's our proposal for additional pathways in XYZ tied to the three-year plan, and it's also going to increase access and equity for students, because then, you know, given the students we're serving with these barriers, they can't afford to spend, you know, several thousand dollars or whatever the case is. So I would like to put that forward as a, here's what we can hopefully work on together now while we're working on this other stuff. That's my suggestion.
I added to the list. Can I make a comment about the community college funding, that the other element in the room here? You know, there are lots of forces up and down the state who think that that the community college funding system in relation to adult education is fine the way it is. Personally, I agree with that, but it really doesn't matter what I agree to, and it almost doesn't matter what this group in this room agrees to. It matters what the people in Sacramento agree to. So I'd just go on the record with two statements. One being, as long as I sit on the executive board, I would never advocate for trying to change that system, because that's the system that I am part of has. However, if there was policy that came down from the state that basically changed the manner in which all adult ed programs are funded, including those within the community college system, then I and my chancellor and our board would have to obviously comply with that. But I would submit that any LARIC-type board up and down the state that has community college people in it is not going to successfully come out and say, yes, and we're going to purposely give up some of our FDS funding, because we use that to support things like Joe just talked about, offsetting student fees for CT programs, etc. Mm-hmm. You can't, you know, we cannot be penalized for a system that recognizes that adult ed should get funded. It's not our fault that the K-12 system and the state legislature does not acknowledge that. So it's not a position that we are going to move from unless I'm told to by my chancellor and my board, or unless the state requires us to do it. So just wanted to make sure everybody heard that clearly.
So I want to go around the room to the exec, and I want to know what I'd like to hear what your expectation out of this is. Your expectation on exec.
So I guess at minimum it would be great, because it sounds like there's not going to be any big changes or big actions, and I think it's probably a good thing, in terms of any kind of big moves as far as what we're all getting with CAPE for 1920, right? So I think what we're getting is what we're getting, okay? And I'm not very confident after, I mean, I think a lot of progress has been made, I love the discussion, but it sounds like there's not really an appetite to move forward with any kind of a per student funding for it. That's kind of what I'm hearing. So what I'm kind of hearing is, hey, we're all happy with what we're getting. Kind of. And maybe we want more, right? But in terms of doing anything appending some kind of state audit report that gets very prescriptive and you must do XYZ, the the way it is now is pretty much the way it's going to stay. I think that's kind of what I'm hearing. So, you know, if that's the case, you know, I don't want to, I as you all know, LAUSD is kind of, for good or bad or whatever, come out of the gate with a proposal for consideration. Doesn't seem like it's being particularly, there doesn't seem to be a whole lot of support for it at this time, which is fine. We can set that aside, or if anybody else has any other proposals, but I guess, could we coalesce, though, around a particular advocacy point? You know, and again, I would like to suggest CTE is one of those areas that is, I think, in terms of adult ed, a key part of maintaining the viability moving forward of adult ed is having strong career tech ed programs. And but from a funding perspective, those are the programs that, unfortunately, cannot get the attention that they deserve. And part of that is, you know, kind of the costs. There are costs that are associated with that. So, again, if from LAUSD's perspective, if there really isn't much of a sort of consensus or appetite around pursuing this whole sort of fund, you know, any of the scenarios or concepts that were presented back in December, then I would like us to really try to land on maybe working together maybe on a CTE proposal of some kind that we could advocate, you know, at the state level.
And just to be clear, I agree, and I'll add this, but it's not that LACCD is against the performance-based funding model to some degree, but as we're finding as a system right now, we, the California Community College system, is finding right now is that exactly what those performance-based funding parameters are and the data that is going to be collected to basically, you know, assure the efficacy of the data and what the data means, everybody wants to slowly tiptoe into that water. So, you know, at some point, if it's performance-based funding tied to adult ed, and I agree with whoever said it, that it's likely going to come down from the state anyway, it's not going to necessarily bubble bottom up, then obviously we'll, you know, we will be supportive of it.
If I may, I think that earlier Bob summarized very nicely many of the points for the legislative advocacy. He is going to send that information to me, whether I like it or not. And perhaps with that, you know, with many of those points, we can craft
some
discussion item for the next meeting so that we can formally adopt that. Right, so that we can now have the board's approval to proceed, and then the following meeting, then you know we discuss it next time, mm-hmm. we shape it a little bit more. I think that limiting to only a few items may make it a little bit easier, and then for the March meeting, then we can adopt it as our legislative, you know, whatever comes out of the February meeting that we adopt in our March meeting, and then it's our official position. Mm-hmm. At least for the year, right? And so hopefully we can then engage in activities to support that legislative advocacy.
Well, I think you have to go back to your districts. Like
right,
Bob,
I think that's
of course.
Short time frame.
It took us 2 years, and Bob heard me countless times saying I need non-credit to be part of the fund. It took 2 years for someone to listen. And
yes.
I provided lots of data how that would change the way I would operate in adult ed. Mm-hmm. And then, I don't know, slowly they dip their toe in the pond with me.
Yes, but, you know, we've been talking about, for example, creating some collateral material that speaks on behalf of the consortium. That also takes time, right? And it, I think it would be helpful to be a focused activity as opposed to a hit and miss.
Came with a paper, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I just don't want us to waste a bunch of time at the end of the day if we're really, we don't have agreement on some fundamental pieces. And mm-hmm. I think, you know,
and then maybe
we
maybe
can't
that's
advocate,
what we
look. Honestly, we really can't advocate by individual districts for adult ed funding.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We can't.
Right.
Because it doesn't come to individual districts. So I think unless we have some really clear, hey, this is all mom and apple pie, we can support this.
Okay. So So we'll talk about it.
You know what I mean? It's going to be an exercise in futility, because at the end of the day, if we're either all in or we're not.
And on the funding formula, the only clarity that I want, I guess there's two pieces of clarity. One, make sure that the numbers are right, you know, just and present the numbers. And secondly, that Montebello gets 3.46% on top of the same amount of money that they got for 18-19. Unless they bring some information forward that because of programmatic needs or whatever, that they have a greater need than that. And then I think everything is more or less status quo, at least going into next year, until we see how all this begins to evolve. Does that make sense?
I guess let me be clear. What action are you proposing as far as...
Well, just a clarity. That as we move into 19-20, everybody's going to get the same that they got in 18-19 plus 3.46%. And in the case of Montebello, that's based upon what they got in 18-19, which was the $6.1 million less number.
Right.
Right? And they get 3.46%. Okay. And then that is a response to the state that said, what did you do? We downsized Montebello on the basis of whatever we felt was the appropriate downsizing. Mm-hmm. And then whatever the state report comes out, if that's not good enough, well, then we have to address that very specific ask, because we have to at that point.
And I'm not ready for any agreement conversation, right? Like just
no, but well, but, well, and I agree, but I guess I agree and I don't agree, because as everybody's pointed out, the cake is baked for 19-20, and they need to leave the room. Alice said 10 minutes ago she has to leave the room knowing what she's going to go back to her superintendent and say, right?
Yes, correct.
So
I'm okay with the cake baked at a minimum of what people got,
yeah.
Right? I'm okay with that. I'm just saying that Culver City will be issuing pink slips if there's not more than what the COLA was, because we've been operating on the additional amount that we did get from Montebello, right? And I'm just, this is, as you just described, the $865,000 for Lerick office, and ours is 1.6, that's half of what all of Culver City gets, right? Like, so I'm just trying to figure out where...
So just to be very clear with what you're saying, mm-hmm. that come March 15th, which is what's required for certificated staff...
That's what I'm going to have to look
at
right now.
Culver City will be issuing pink slip.
That's exactly... When I'm looking at this right now, that's my panic right now. And it wasn't my panic last week.
Okay, well then we need to know that, and that would be... So the subject of a special board meeting.
I'll bring it up. I'll bring it up on Friday, exactly where I'm at.
But you're saying a special board meeting in addition to a regular business.
It can be however, it's a personnel matter, so it's not necessarily something, I don't know if your district wants Lerick in a public meeting to go forward and say, you know, Culver City is going to lay off faculty. I don't know if you want that.
No, I don't want that.
Yeah.
So we'll come back to that. I'm just letting you know exactly where we are.
That's what you see.
Okay. So what do you see, Emilio, going forward from Burbank?
Your
expectations.
am fine with the what Bob mentioned earlier, which is the status quo for 19-20. We would certainly be open to looking at a matrix for additional dollars that come for a performance matrix for the allocation of funding for additional dollars that come into the district. So beyond what we have already, the figures that Mr. Estudias provided for 19-20, if there were any new funding that were to come in for 19-20, we would be open to a discussion of a funding, performance matrix for the distribution of those additional new dollars.
Okay, so pretty much we want to wait for the further recommendations. We want to work to align the legislative advocacy, make sure that it's aligned with the state organizations, and then basically finality. We're willing to discuss reallocation for the good of Lerick.
Okay. Anybody else?
So I think if you're at the point, Culver City is at the point that you just described, then I think there needs to be a closed door meeting to talk about personnel issues and what that actually looks like in each district with the appropriate exec and Larry's staff. Or point people.
Well, that the closed session wouldn't involve the point people.
So. Where it's staff. So.
Wouldn't
it could. It's how you define your staff as each of those districts.
Okay. I'll work with Lancy to create whatever that looks like. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So we so much further. Let's try to get the. Okay. We got to 12:28. I am going to church, just so you all know. I'm gonna have a lot of prayers for myself there. For us, I think that it was good in terms of having some discussion and getting a sense of where people are and where they are not. I think both things were important, and really, it, you know, today was designed not for us to get defensive or defend ourselves, but really to hear and then present what it is we want people to consider. And then we'll just continue to move forward at some point with identifying, because while we can go with the existing funding for 1920 the way it is, if more money comes, we have to have a way of distributing it. We have to figure that out. And it's much easier to figure it out before there's actual money on the table, because then our perception of how we want to figure it out after the fact, which is quite honestly why I wanted the criteria conversation to happen absent dollars and absent enrollment numbers. Because what would you believe is fair? What do you think is important to count when you're not looking at those things? And the reality is, those should be important. If they're important, then they're important. They shouldn't change their importance because it does that make sense? If we're about serving students. So it's just looking at those things from what's important so that we can serve our students. What data is important so we can show everybody both in outcomes and barriers and any other data that we can bring to the legislature to show that what we're doing has a great return on investment, right? That it has a return on investment, even if it's, you know, the subsequent generations that are impacted by a parent's goal, you know. But we have to be able to articulate that in a way that's very simple. So I hope you guys have a great weekend, the rest of your weekend. And we'll see you guys Friday morning. Wait, what time do we have to be here Friday?
We have to be here at 9:30 is when the meeting starts.
Are we going to have breakfast or no?
Sure.
Because it's 9:30? Friday is, I think Friday is the three-year planning thingy.
We're going to identify the three areas of focus in the morning, and then we'll have breakfast and lunch.
What's for breakfast?
Probably some more breakfast today and lunch. I don't know. What would you like out of this?
Yeah, actually, on
this is
really
weird today.
If I may have your attention for just a second before we go, guys, I just want to request that maybe we might want to consider coming in at 9 o'clock on Friday, so that, you know, we're set to go at 9:30. I think that that agenda is going to be very full, and there's going to be a lot of discussion. We're talking about the next 3 years of LEREC. So I would like to allow as much time as possible for that particular meeting. So if you guys could help us out with that, that would be great. We have a sign-in sheet that is going around. If you haven't signed it, please, on your way out, make sure to sign it. And once again, thank you for your attendance and for...
What do they call? What do you guys call your discussions when you guys have them with the? What you guys all you call?
Are we talking? I want to be clear. 9 o'clock Friday.
9 o'clock on Friday. I will send a reminder. Even though the agenda says 9:30, 9 o'clock, please.
Are you in executive session on?
It'll probably be down here and maybe down.
I like staying healthy.
Unless we can get the right amount of heat.
Oh, weather-wise, probably here.
Bring a jacket.
The right amount of heat. That room is so big to heat.
Yes.
We're trying to heat it, but it's still frigid.
Executive session on Friday? Or
it's an open meeting. Both the morning and the afternoon are open meetings, so the public is
there. Stay healthy. Healthy.
Yes.
That one is...
The post is a 3-year, the earlier one is 3-year planning, not the personnel one.
Yeah.
And I'll, so I just need to.
Still learning.
Okay, I'm not avoiding anybody, I'm just running out. I promise.
I gotta go
put makeup on now. Now I gotta put makeup on. Did I leave my keys in the car?
Go ahead.
Where are my keys? Oh my gosh. Now the question is, where is the heck?
I don't think so. I mean, we work really hard to try to minimize.
Okay.
Before you go,
we can't just have
sure.
I'm going to have to look at the man.
Okay.